This is Radio Free Cybertron with your host, Brian Kilby, featuring Chris, Don, Rob, Diecast, John, and Melvar. For the latest Transformer news, reviews, and more, visit tformers.com.
This is Radio Free Cybertron episode. What episode is it?
I don't know.
400!
I think it's episode 16, or maybe 17, I forget.
Is it episode, is it season 9, episode 54?
Is it G1 issue 12? Or G2 issue 12?
It's season 3, episode 84. I don't know.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, so this is episode 400, recorded January 14th, 2015. I'm your host, Brian Kilby. With me, we have Headmaster Don, Diecast, Chris, a.k.a. XV, Melvar, and the Robs, Rob Clay and Rob Springer.
Hey, trust us, we're here.
Even though you can't see them, they're here.
They're live. Rex.
Yeah, that's exactly right. God, so this is a pretty jam-packed show. Man, I kind of want to just jump into it, but I can't.
Yeah, it'll just fly by. It'll be fine. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, so it's a jam-packed show, but we're glad that you are along with us. So it's episode 400, and I would be remiss if I didn't mention we also just celebrated our 15th anniversary back in October, which averages out to roughly an episode every 2 weeks, but we're a weekly show, but we had about a year period of about 8 years when we weren't going that often. In fact, we had a period of about 2 years when we didn't have an episode. So if you're wondering how we're at 400 and we're 15 years old, that's why. Most of you probably know, but there's always a new person listening.
To be fair, in those first few years when the show was more regular, it wasn't always exactly weekly anyway.
It was pretty sporadic.
To begin with, I posted it every Friday because I had nothing else going on on my Friday nights, which was a point which was a joke in the show, but it's true. It was true. It became pretty sporadic after 2002.
And it got to a point where you're like, there's a new one?
Yeah.
Really?
So the last episode we posted in 2004, actually, it was like front page news on TFW. I was like, holy crap, Radio Free Cybertron's back. Of course, there was a lot less news back then.
And a lot less podcasts.
Oh, there were no other podcasts. Yeah.
Hi, welcome to Battlestar Galactica Weekly.
Was the new Galactica going in 2004?
They were just talking about the old one, man.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that actually...
The superior one.
Actually. That's actually...
Well, I will agree with you on this point, Don.
That's effectively what we were doing to begin with, because it was Beast Machines, Beast Wars, and G1. Beast Machines, yeah. I think, was concurrent when we started, but...
Basically, yeah.
But, yeah. Technically, when we started, it was still... I think it was still Beast Wars.
By the time we started, Beast Wars had concluded... Did first run in the first season of Beast Machine, but it's like just beginning.
Yeah,
did it start like right at 2000?
Beast Machines,
the show.
The show started fall of 99 because the show was on. The show had its like whole first season run before the toys even hit stores.
That's why I'm misremembering. You're right.
Just like Prime.
Yeah. Hey, this is John DeLuna with the ATT Buzz.
Yep.
What's everyone talking about? Beast Machines. No one likes it.
That's actually pretty accurate to how it was.
It was so... I like it now, but at the time I was like...
Yeah.
It was not well received.
Well, yeah, it was just a problem of, like, it was such a departure from what we'd gotten used to.
So I'm not to knock on the guy, because it's awesome, and he's still around. I know he's on AllSpark, but I guarantee you, and this makes me feel so old for remembering this, but it was probably a bunch of people saying it was crap, and Zach Williams saying, hey, it's not that bad. Give it some time. And he was right.
I don't actually know
that he said that, but he was always the voice of reason. So I'm assuming that he said that. So retroactively, Zach William liked Beast Machines, and he ended up being right.
Yeah, well, it's not a bad show. It's just, it's like, all right, man, I really like Friends. Okay, coming up next is the spinoff of Friends, because Friends is over. Star Joey, and it's nothing like it.
Starring Joey and everybody else, but Joey's the leader now, so deal with it.
Yeah,
that was pretty much it. Hey,
yeah,
so,
and everyone acts different.
Yeah, so again, 400th episode, we got a lot to cover, and we're doing a poor job of it, so let's go ahead and get it going. Hey, so this week's episode is brought to you by you, because you're going to help us pay for this thing by shopping at Amazon through our website. Deal? We'll tell you about it later. So on the show this week, we have This Week in History, we have news, we have an interview with our pal Jim Sorensen, who tells us about Transformers Almanac, Transformers Animated, the complete AllSpark Almanac. It's hard to say. There's too many words there, Jim. Rename that thing. XV reviews Combiner Wars, Windcharger, and Thundercracker in old RFC fashion, because XV used to do all the toy reviews on the show. Just like
these joints are stiff.
It's 4 centimeters tall. That's a really short transformer.
I forgot to do the measurements in this. Damn.
This is why I write these out first now. I miss you struggling with toys on mic, man.
Those were classic. We also have the return of Transformers Rewind with an episode that we've been waiting forever to do, which is Five Faces of Darkness. We have a 400th episode retrospective.
Which I think you just got a preview of a couple minutes ago.
Yeah. Oh, well. We go farther into that. People who are listening to the podcast will get a special episode of the ATT Buzz. And for the 99% of you who weren't around back then, ATT was alt.toys.transformers, which was a Usenet group, which was, I guess, a proto-message board, you could say. It's a different form of the internet that predated the World Wide Web, where most of us on this show actually used to hang out back when we were young.
Mm.
But now that we're old, we're hanging out here with you.
Pictures were generally crappy on the internet.
Yeah. And lots more. So let's go ahead and jump into This Week in History. So, guys, this is a big one. In 2003, the episode Conspiracy premiered in the U.S., and that episode always freaked me out because of those little worm things that took over the minds of all the Federation officers. I hated that episode. As a kid, it always freaked me out.
It's a shame that the Armada episode wasn't that good.
It was better.
Oh, wait, yeah, this is Armada. Never mind. I'm thinking Star Trek Next Generation.
It was better because you got to say, hey, at least they're not watching Star Trek.
Oh, no.
Okay, I honestly don't know a thing about this episode. I don't remember it.
I actually looked at the wiki page to try to figure it out now, but I don't really remember either.
I picked this entirely because of that Star Trek The Next Generation episode, which season one always freaked me out. I hated that episode, but...
And we never got any resolution from it either.
We never got any resolution from that episode.
They were going to in Voyager, but, you know...
That Voyager. One episode happened and changed everything. So, yeah.
So that shows you how much we remember Armada.
I remember Armada a lot. Just those certain episodes where it's like, we're standing around talking. Look at us stand around and talk. Yeah, no one remembers that.
I feel bad because I gave Armada mostly a fair shake. I watched most of it. I loved the toys, but... I don't know. I
had a lot of fun with the show, but yeah, it's just like a lot of other things. About a good 25% of it needs to be trimmed out
and reanimated.
Then
that's Micron Legend.
Then I
didn't do enough.
Then Energon came along, and I'm like, I was going to give it a fair shake, and I sat down and I watched the first few episodes, and I just stopped.
They pretty much gave up after 10 episodes on that show.
And I never gave Cybertron the do it deserved. And apparently Cybertron ended up being a lot better, but I wouldn't know it because I didn't watch it back then. I've gone back and watched it sporadically since then, but I'm not as dedicated to the Unicron trilogy in general as I should be.
You know, that's really fine. I mean, Cybertron didn't really contribute all that much going forward. It's not like you're... really missing out.
Yeah, it was there. It was fun while it lasted. It's over. You kind of like, hey, we got Energon. I mean, Armada, Starscream, and Generations. Okay.
Back when Cybertron. So I was really into the Armada toys and really into Energon. I pretty much owned pretty much all of Cybertron. I mean, pardon me, Energon, and like 99% of Armada. But I was like too busy, like with my career and everything, when Cybertron came along. So I bought very little. And I pretty much honestly thought I was mostly done with Transformers at that point. And then Animated came along, and I pretty much bought everything I could. Believe it or not, I skipped out on most of Classics when it debuted.
Fortunately, you've had many opportunities to buy those molds subsequently.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Remember when that was a big deal? It's like, guys, they're actually doing it.
It's like, wow. Yeah, I'd never expected that stuff to happen. Like,
we thought Alternators was it.
Yeah. I thought Alternators was, you know, way more than we deserved, in quotes.
Yeah, I remember picking up Prowl, Tankor / Octane, and Astrotrain in that first wave. And I'm thinking,
okay, and Don, thinking Astrotrain... Astrotrain was 2 years before that.
Yeah.
Universe, Twin Prowl, and Octane.
Yeah, Prowl was 2.0.
Okay, yeah. I'm sorry. I was getting my waves. Anyway, the very first wave that had Prowl and Tankor
and Sunstreaker.
That I remember looking at those in my hand and thinking, this is as good as it's going to get. It'll never get any better than this.
And then you got Galvatron the next wave, and you were proven right.
Man, I can't wait to. Good God!
How is this a classic?
Didn't Galvatron ship with Ironhide?
Yeah, Ironhide was pretty hard to find for a minute there.
I don't think Galvatron and Ironhide were at the same time, because I got Galvatron as soon as he popped up. I don't remember even seeing Ironhide on the shelf.
Yeah, it took a long time for Ironhide to show up.
Yeah, you're right.
Sideswipe. It was Sideswipe.
Yes, it was Sideswipe. Which I skipped out on for some reason.
I think it's a little better than Sunstreaker, personally, but that's
it kind of is. I think it's from having the hood chest and not the roof.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, the ups and downs of being a Transformers fan. And I would
say, but you know what was a good Armada toy? Going back around to that.
Which one?
You know what I'm going to say, Kilby.
I'm assuming you're going to say. Sure. Yeah. Yep. I love Scavenger.
Scavenger legitimately is a good toy.
He's fun.
I understand why people might not like it so much as a Transformers toy, but objectively as a toy, it is a fun thing to play with.
Yeah, absolutely.
We got Unicron out of our Armada, so that was good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then I don't think we would have gotten Primus from Cybertron if we hadn't got Armada Unicron.
And you really can't fault Unicron for that. So let's go ahead and jump to the news. So, was it last week that we talked about Devastator showing up? Yeah, it was in the Toys R Us computers. So it says confirmed it is in the Toys R Us computer.
In Canada.
Yeah. Or as we call it, what no one will stop posting over and over again on Facebook groups.
I know.
Oh, it's like, hey, what's this post under me? Never mind. You guys hear about Devastator? No. No, not at all.
This Facebook group.
But
man,
the news we heard today, which is apparently a rumor, that's what's really bugging me, that it's going to be one leader and four Voyagers.
Okay, so... That all right, so okay, give me a minute here. So like the person who posted that heard that information from a distributor / supplier they know who saw a picture at a Hasbro Asia function of some kind, and you know, there was not a physical model present there to look at, and I'm gonna guess, you know, it's a picture on a computer screen, it's about that big. And whether it's in color or not, you know, the Constructicons, Devastator, they're all one color. If there's a chest wing across the front, you're not going to be able to really tell, you know, hook on top, long haul in the middle. It's going to look like one big piece.
I hope that's true, because that just blows my mind. But six Voyagers would make me really excited.
Yeah, it even said that in the box, they weren't sure of the figure count in the box. So,
But you know
we're pretty much talking a picture on a distribution, so who even knows it's the correct picture?
Who knows that the picture exists?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We're talking about my insider.
We're talking about somebody who has a Hasbro insider friend who told them something, and we all know historically what that meant. Nothing.
Bupkis.
Yeah. But, you know, we will know more come Toy Fair 2015. In 1 month from today, which is going to be a Saturday, February 14th. So spend your Valentine's Day with us during our annual live stream of Toy Fair. As XV and I were talking earlier, it's basically our Super Bowl every year.
And if you think about it, too, you know, you're going to be spending the afternoon of Valentine's Day with us. And then still, if you have someone special to spend your evening with on Valentine's Day, you'll be perfectly free to. And then come back on Sunday for the rest of our coverage of non-Transformers stuff.
Yeah, so I really want – we had, I think, 3,000 concurrent viewers year before last for Toy Fair. I want to beat that this year. So let's see if we can make that happen. It'll be pretty awesome.
And we'll have someone there live, so it'll be breaking news. It's not going to be old news.
Oh no, it's going to be awesome. We'll talk to you live from the event after you've done your coverage. We'll see if we can get Ant as well, and it'll be great. I love Toy Fair,
and of course Diecast. You'll be tweeting live as much as you can on our at TF Radio on Twitter.
Yes.
So
yeah,
everybody should follow that, and yeah.
If you're not following at TF Radio, you should.
Because chances are the tweets are going to be pictures mostly and very little word.
And we try to get all of our Transformers podcast friends on Saturday, usually for at least 6 hours. So we normally start around 12 Eastern time and go till about 6 p.m. Eastern time.
It's a pretty fun revolving door of, you know, guest hosts and just people who can't always be on with us regularly.
Yeah, it's a blast. We love it. And we don't always do the Sunday coverage, but this year we're going to do the Sunday coverage. However much we do, I don't know.
But we will be here Sunday afternoon to some degree.
Yeah, it'll be great. And that'll be at tfradio.net/live, just like you're watching us now, hopefully. But yeah, so we'll know more. Also, another rumor was more reissue stuff, which I don't care much about. But one of the reissues that came up was Trypticon, which has yet to be reissued. We did get Beast Wars 2nd Gigastorm back in 99, and that's the same mold. But Trypticon himself has yet to be reissued, so that would be cool if that actually happened.
And Gigastorm was missing quite a bit of stuff compared to when it was Trypticon, so...
Well, guys, I want to remind you also about the total rumor about Masterpiece Megatron, a new one, because inside this box that features a bunch of G1 characters, it has a picture of Megatron on it. I mean, we all really think it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's great.
And my inside sources saw a picture of it, and they said it turns into a super, super good gun, and it's going to be exactly everything. But let's just hope Hasbro doesn't screw it up, guys, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So, I guess so. There's a Platinum... Speaking of
reissues... I'll make a YouTube video of it.
Speaking of reissues, the Platinum Edition Insecticons are at retail. In the U.S., go get the. So I hate to say this. I hate to say this.
You're going to buy them, aren't you?
No, I've got them. I don't need them. But the thing, it goes back to the stuff we talked about before. There's so many people who are excited about stuff and driving the prices up on stuff, and I get it because people who are late to the party. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you saw the same post I saw today, Rob, but there was that person that said, "Oh man, I'm going to be so broke."
Oh yeah.
And, you know, like, reissue Insecticons, I can't wait.
He's like, okay. Go to Ross, man. They're gonna be there.
Well, no, it's not just that, it's they're freaking Insecticons, who cares?
They're a dime a dozen.
Yeah, you can get a loose complete Insecticon for like $15 on eBay.
Literally, I got a Scrapnel this past April for $9 with
a Shrapnel.
Thank you.
I love that you changed his name to Scrapnel.
Actually, I just said it by default. I don't even know why I did.
No, that's a good thing because you've been reprogrammed. I like that.
But I literally was just at a local comic toy show, and they're $9. I was like, okay.
No, but,
yeah. So
it's not hard to come by.
So we'd heard previously from, again, Canadian Toys R Us listings, Platinum Insecticon set was $99.99 in Canada.
Yeah.
So it came out at Kmart here in the U.S.
$80.
You know, still have one of those around. Yeah, $80.
So technically it's not really out at retail yet because it's out at Kmart.
But
it showed up at a Cryptids
It's like a novelty retail store.
It's like seeing it in Bigfoot's hand. You always hear about it, but you never actually see one.
But I want to go back. I'm not knocking new fans, because we love new fans. We want new fans to listen. But just from a historical perspective, it's like the cons aren't that great. And when they were last reissued, they were like $35.
They were
That's
$35.
What I was going to say. I paid $35 for them.
And that's not been that long ago.
Okay, so in 2009, when those came out, I was at Toys R Us and looked at that and was like, you know what? I can get these cheaper on eBay. I'm not buying these for $35.
It's one of those.
If it goes on sale for $25 or under, fine.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's one of those things where you can really. It's one of those, like, you just kind of accept after a while when people are like, man, finding a G1 Ravage is really hard. And it's like, yeah, unless you look. I mean,
which you can get
a G1 Ravage for free just by going to Bob.
Rob. And this is a great time to bring up. So a lot of people come into the fandom and they don't know how to collect things. They don't know where to go. So one thing that you and I are going to do at Jolanta is we're going to have a panel. And we're going to the new fans. We're going to tell them how and where to collect Transformers, how to acquire Transformers. And we're actually going to post that as a show. So for people who don't have knowledge or experience on how to do it, we're going to help people out. And that's going to be a show that comes up in March.
Yes. And it's like, people always, what's the first thing they do? They're like, hey, I'm going to go to eBay. All right.
You can.
You can, but it's really like,
you have to shop smart.
Yeah,
exactly. I think that's the hard part. Like, man, it must be really hard to get a G1 Optimus Prime. It's like, he's right next to that box of free Ravages.
Well, the good thing about this is you're going to help a lot of fans get the knowledge they need. And as we all know, knowing is half the battle.
Yeah, nice.
You know, it's the other half?
So,
lasers. Oh.
So before we move on from this, I just want to bring up one other, what will probably be a platinum thing. So, you know, there's the Year of the Goat Masterpiece Soundwave recolor. So someone got a scan of the UPC code and scanned it at a Toys R Us. It's in the system.
Interesting.
And it's listed at $190.
Wow. I don't know if I'm more amazed by the price or someone's like, I want to take the time to do this.
I mean, printing it off is not a big deal. You just do it off your phone, really. Yeah.
I don't even think the printer.
I guess I'm more like, I don't think it ever occurred to me, like, that's a really good picture of the barcode.
Let's see if it'll scan.
Hey, Mickey was talking a few days ago about wanting the Year of the Goat Optimus Prime, which is the Laser Prime mold.
Yeah, I want that myself.
And, like, I was saying to him almost jokingly, $150, but with this, it probably is.
I regret not getting the eHobby Laser Magnus.
Me too.
Recolor of that.
Had so many opportunities.
Why didn't I get that?
I'll tell you why, because that was right at the beginning of the floor falling out from under me. He's like, hold on to precious money.
But yeah, so, I know what you mean.
Yeah.
But, this version, though? No. Don't want it.
I want it, but I don't. I'm at a weird impasse here, and some of you guys are probably here with me, too. When you see something like G2 Optimus Prime, and you remember seeing it at Walmart for like $25. And I know it was 20 years ago. But, you know, the G1 reissues, it was like, yeah, I could see myself paying $30 for a reissue prowl. It's a reprint of an old toy. But it's just like, really? Vector Prime's hard to come by?
Well, and I mean, for something a little more recent, go to the Platinum Cybertron Leader Starscream, which sold for $40 in 2006.
I bought it for $100
as a Platinum toy.
And it's a terrible toy.
And what's different?
Go to Goodwill, find it for $5.
I remember they used to, you know, the get an iPad free if you take all these surveys, little scams?
Which is how you got yours, I thought.
No, I that was a legit thing. But you know what I'm talking about, the little scams where you have to subscribe to things and yada yada. That toy was one of those. I wish I would have screen capped one of those, because it's like I kept seeing those, like, get a free iPod, get a free this, you know, sign up for all these subscriptions, you know, do the month trials, da 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 da. You know, it's like, oh great, I'm getting hair loss pills or something. Great. Still ain't got this iPod. And that was one of them, was that Starscream. And now it's $100. So you could build a house out of them.
Yeah. So let's see here. Jumping to the next item, you can now pre-order Masterpiece 21G, G2 Bumblebee, and MP10 reissue.
Now, weren't we talking about this last week?
Okay, so you did happen to suggest that there should be a G2 Bumblebee reissue.
And yes, and then literally like 2 hours later.
Literally, yeah. You probably just already got that news item for T-Formers and you hadn't just rolled it over yet, had you?
I should do that sometime.
Wait, I got it. The recolor of this mold with the new jetpack, but the recolor of this mold is how they're going to pay for the retool to make him Cliff Jumper.
I think they've probably already got that made, too. It's a lot of people like to forget. Takara will literally repaint anything.
Yeah.
Over and over. And you can buy the same toy the next year as a different character. You want to talk about Hasbro? People used to complain about, I wish Hasbro was more like Takara. Guess what?
Yeah.
I wish they Hasbro are. Made more things black.
Well, you got your Bumblebee, right?
Well, with Combiner, Wars, the only thing that's going to be black is the inside of all of our wallets.
It's a wallet. I mean, they just kind of are, Don.
We're going to see XP.
So, with this, the G2 Bumblebee, you get the faceplate, which was an Amazon exclusive standard in there. And then instead of exosuit with Wiki, you get a jetpack from the Dinobot Island episode.
Nice.
Neat.
You know, I was wondering where they were pulling the jetpack from. I didn't see a picture clear enough to look at it, but I'm glad you said where it was from.
I'm glad.
Yeah, somehow I remember that without ever having looked it up either. I just remember it.
And before we jump to a third party news, I do want to mention this. So I pay for Radio Free Cybertron out of my pocket. You know, we haven't been taking sponsorship or anything up till now. And it's one of those things I've wanted to avoid. But I figured out an easy, awesome way to, like, help pay for RFC. You can go to tfradio.net, and I have a link here that says Amazon Shop Now. If you click through, you see all these awesome Transformers. And you can actually just click on that, or you could click it, and it'll bring up, you know, Ultra Magnus or whatever, and you could buy it. And that's great because it helps me out because money comes back to us. Or you can just click Amazon. It'll take you to the website and you can look for whatever. Like, I don't know, aftermarket bidets. Let's look for a bidet. I've been literally
bidet?
Yeah, $26. You can add one to your toilet. You can just add it. It's like luxury for $26. You can get anything on Amazon. You can get, I don't know, a mailbox.
You can get a circumcision training kit.
I'm not looking that up. I'm not looking that
you
one up.
You already have, though.
It's
I
terrible.
Know this for a fact.
Yeah, but the cool thing is, you're already shopping at Amazon anyway. And if you buy it through that link, helps us out. Doesn't cost any more. Amazon kicks back a few percentage back to us. And, you know, you hear this on other podcasts. And, like, these podcasts where people get paid millions of dollars a year, you know, that money, they don't need it. But you know what? This helps me pay for this thing.
And if you're worried about a short lifespan on that training kit, they do make circumcision training refill packs you can buy also.
Yeah, no. But, you're already using Amazon. Once in a while, click on the link. It'll help us out. We would really appreciate it.
And like, for example, Brian, I was looking at Amazon a while ago, and Voyager Slog was down to $13.50 on Amazon, which is about $10 less than retail in most places still. So if you need an extra something to boost you over the $35 free shipping, you can't find a slog or they're still $25, $13 at Amazon.
That's great. That's awesome. Actually, heck, you know, I'm in a froggy mood. I'm going to see what's on my Amazon wish list. I have a Don Mattingly action figure. I could get a Don Mattingly, because I want it. I have a drone, I have a little helicopter, I have a stereo turntable. Ooh, I already bought that Transformers the movie soundtrack. There's that bidet and a glow in the dark toilet seat. You could buy any of that stuff, and it would help us out. You don't have to buy that. Whatever's on your list, just click on the URL.
Is that still $13?
No, just click on that link. It'll go there. Seriously, that's just putting it out there. Help us out.
Or if you want something awesome for yourself, get the complete Allspark Almanac.
I'm going to tell you guys right now what you can buy and help us out and help yourself out. The other day, my girlfriend had a few dollars left on an Amazon gift card. Saw the, I think it's a knockoff of the Ravage USB thing. $4 with $1 shipping.
That's ridiculous. I think it's a piece of crap, though.
But you know, you're not buying it to use.
If you buy it, it'll help us out. So let's go ahead and jump, to third-party news. And so two new third-party figures announced. Don, this is one for you. Tell us about it.
Oh, that would be what I pre-ordered today. it's going to be a Function X Fans Project Quick Switch.
Yep.
And
Madlaw.
And if you look at all the characters, the first name of each mode spells out Madlaw.
It's certainly one of their less obtuse names.
Yeah, but the thing of it is, though, we all saw this at TFCon. Those of us that were there, it's hard to imagine Quick Switch as a good looking figure. With all the love I have for G1, Quick Switch is not a great figure.
What's the price on this?
It's
105 or so.
It's cheaper than I thought it would be, to be honest.
Yeah.
And I think it looks great. I mean, those colors only really fit Quick Switch. I can't imagine those colors on any other character and them working. But it looks good. I like the modes. The character definitely needs an updated toy, especially if you go displaying with a Hexatron. If you got Hexatron and you want to get this Madlaw, you know, I just hope everything works out good for the figure.
I wonder if they're going to redo this in six shot colors later, though.
Is this going to be the same size?
Six night?
Yeah.
Is this the same size as the other Function toys?
I don't know. It's more expensive, so I would imagine it's a little bit bigger and probably a little more complicated.
If I remember from TFCon, it's actually not much bigger.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Well, so
it must just be all the moving parts.
Yeah. When I was looking at it in robot mode, I got down to take a few of the pictures at TFCon with my phone. And I want to say it's a little bit taller than the regular Function figures, but shorter than Hardbone.
Don just wanted to bring up Hardbone.
How does it compare to a grind rod, Don?
Yeah.
The other toy, though, that pre-orders went up for was Fenrir, which is the
that somebody on ATT?
Was it? I thought it was a character from Lord of the Rings, but it's the not Sinner twin.
Oh, that looks good.
What's his name again?
It does.
Fenrir.
Fenrir?
Well, I think that's from Norse mythology, I thought. He's one of the
Fenris.
I'm not Googling Fenrir, be honest with you guys. even with Safe Search 1, I'm pretty sure that's going to break it.
Yeah.
Just check Goatsy. That'll tell you what it means.
Oh, sure.
Yes.
Let me look that up real quick. Hold on. Okay, hold on.
I'm doing it right now.
That's not a Transformer! Okay.
I have to say,
though, you have the orifice to all knowledge, don't you know?
Yeah.
I put it in exactly as it sounded, Finrear, and I've got a bunch of spoilers for Hondas.
Nice.
Oh, and disc guards.
Not what I expected.
Not at all.
It's so pretty.
Although I did get some suggestions. Let me try this again. Finrier. Yeah.
It's Finrier.
Okay, let's see what comes up. I don't even know what the crap I'm reading right now.
Yeah.
No. Well,
this has nothing to do with a dragon. I know that much is for sure.
I have to say, though, comparing this to Albrecht, I think this looks a lot better in both modes than Albrecht. Their Ripper Snapper homage. It's just cleaner, and it's a lot better proportioned in both modes.
I'm getting some French crap for Fenrir. Not a definition. Wiktionary. I bet this is going to be dependable.
go ahead.
What is going on? It's... Oh! to end, to finish, to conclude. So really, he should be the last one, shouldn't he?
I guess. Okay. So, is anybody buying these?
I am.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You have the not blot already.
Yeah. Yep.
Dang.
Yeah. Although troll is something probably even you can just get as a one off. Yeah. If you don't care about getting a whole Abominus.
I mean, troll. That figure there. If I bought any one figure so far, it'd be that one.
Well, these run for about $100 each.
Yeah.
I really should, because I have like two G1 Abominuses and like a billion Cop Hunger figures. So
it's just the transformation on that troll. First figure on troll. Thank you. It's just really just an incredible transformation. Just
let's be honest. There's two figures that you would make of the Terracons and expect to sell standalone: Blot and maybe Hunger.
I just had an epiphany about this third party Hunger. I'm not calling it a ridiculous name. They hooted a fool. You know how Hunger is like the easiest to get toy, no matter where you go. Like someone will just give you a Hunger. Like before you get to that box of free Optimuses and Ravages, it's like they're throwing it to you as you walk into the room. Like you'll just end up with a Hunger. What if this third party Hunger ends up being the third party equivalent of the third party toy you end up with by default? And like, why do I have five? I remember getting one.
I got the perfect name.
This is not a dino.
I want to say that you're wrong with that, Rob. But you know what? I think I have three Hungers.
You always get one guy's like, "Hey, I found a Transformer, old one I have. You want it?" And you're like, "Yeah, sure." And you're like, "It's always Hunger."
A friend of mine gave me a box of Transformers about.
There's gonna be like 50 of them in there.
Back before Christmas, a friend of mine gave me a box of Transformers that he had as a kid, including like a Mega Supreme and a couple other things. I'm pretty sure there's a Hunger in there.
The new Beast Hunters one. I've got three Hungers. How did I do this?
Don't know. So jumping to the last third party. It's not really a news item. It's really a follow-up to last week. We were talking about Iron Factory Maiden and how awesome-looking it was. Well, here she is. Well, she's the not Windblade figure, the Legends size. And here she is with Metroplex in all her beauty.
Oh, she's so tiny.
Well, Legend size, I mean, what do you expect?
I know, but she's so pretty. I want that figure.
Yeah, I want to get one, too.
Yeah, I need that. But I just wanted to show that off because it's purdy. So there we go. Hey, let's see here. Also, a couple things on more on TFormers.com. There's an article that XV penned Combiner Wars, Alpha Bravo, and Slingshot. More than just a name. You want to give us a real quick highlight of what that is, XV?
Pretty much when we got the first teaser, a silhouette of Superion from Takara Tomy rep on Twitter, showing there would be two Firefly figures on there instead of an Alpha Bravo. I photoshopped an Alpha Bravo out of Firefly to be as toy accurate as any of the existing figures are, and it's pretty damn boring, and I'm kind of thinking more than just not being able to use the Slingshot name, making an accurate Slingshot toy would just be a really boring figure. So maybe there is more than one factor to getting an Alpha Bravo in our aerial bots.
Alpha Bravo, let's all swallow it up. It's because it's the toy we all needed.
Not the one we deserved.
Yeah.
That and, let's face it, toy economy.
Well, I have to say, though, I said this in the pre-show, I am glad that we got the Alpha Bravo because it breaks up the sameness because, well, despite all my love for the aerial bots and everything, it's a very boring group of toys. It's four the same jet and one bigger jet. This at least breaks up the dynamic and gives you something, a new visual silhouette to look at.
And we might talk a little more about this later in the show, too. So,
Okay,
I'll hold my thoughts.
We're going to recap the Combiner Wars stuff. Mm-hmm. Hey, Aunt Rob, real quick. You made an update to Transformers, our blog. You posted another in the series of this really strange blog that you've been doing.
I am not holding back and retelling the history of the Transformers fandom. Is the true story and how it happened, and nothing less.
It's at tfradio.net/blog.
The books of blood, once they're open, they cannot be unspilled.
Okay, so...
I don't know. Yeah. I don't want to know.
Let's go ahead and take a break.
Can't read.
And we'll jump to our interview with Jim, and we'll come back in just a minute after that. So we are with Jim Sorensen, one of the two men behind Transformers AllSpark Almanac Complete Edition. Is that the official title, Jim?
Yeah, I mean, you've sort of rearranged the words a bit.
Oh, well, what's the actual name?
The Complete AllSpark Almanac.
Oh, beautiful. So,
short, sweet, to the point. I actually had been advocating for the AllSpark Almanac Omnibus because I like the alliteration, but my editor did not.
No, oh, that's unfortunate. So the last time we spoke with you was about Transformers Legacy, and that was a few months ago. And what a great book.
Oh, thank you.
I love that book.
I heard your review of it. It was really flattering.
It's a great book. It's very, very pleased with that. I waited like a year and a half, or I forgot when I found out about it. But
we announced it early because we wanted to be able to beat the drums and try and solicit the fans to help. And it was a good decision because it helped get us from 50-60% complete to about 95% complete. But it did mean that the idea of the book had been floating in the ethosphere for quite a while before it actually came out. So, you know, some of that's my fault.
But you know what? Totally worth the wait.
Glad to hear it.
Loved it.
And so, we got it out in time for Christmas, so that was really, and we got it out in time for the 30th anniversary. Both goals of ours. We did not get it out in time for BotCon or the movie, which were other goals of ours. But
yeah, man, the movie really lifts things. It's kind of...
Yeah, a rising tide lifts all boats.
Yeah, totally does. Hey, so I have the first and second edition of, or the first and second volumes of the AllSpark Almanac. But for those of us not familiar, so what is the AllSpark Almanac? And what's the complete edition?
Well, the AllSpark Almanac and the AllSpark Almanac 2 were our attempts to make a comprehensive guide to the universe of Transformers Animated. And we had, that was the third book that we'd done after the first two ARC books, which were black and white character design model books from the original Generation 1 series. And funnily enough, that was what we pitched to IDW for an animated book. It was called The ARC Animated, and we just wanted to do the character models. But because we had such a hard time finding the character models for Generation 1, we had sort of built in this huge runway for us to create the AllSpark Almanac, or the ARC Animated, as we were calling it at the time. And we didn't need any of that because whereas with the Generation 1 material, we had to scour the world, literally the way, I mean, a lot of it came out of Japan and some of it came out of the United Kingdom, not entirely dissimilar to how we put together Legacy. With Transformers Animated, we just drove to Burbank. Bill and I both lived in Los Angeles at the time. Now I'm in Albuquerque, New Mexico. But we just drove to Burbank with a hard drive, portable hard drive, and we said, give us all your character models. And about 20 minutes later, they said, okay, do you want anything else? And I said, sure, give us all the backgrounds. And they gave us that. And they said, do you want anything else? And I said, yeah, give us all the storyboards. And they said, okay, do you want anything else? Until I ran out of things to ask for. And then we had all this material and all this time, and it wound up making us want to use the time. I think, you know, maybe the smarter thing to do would have been to just do the book that we'd pitched and then sit on our butts for 5 months and get paid exactly the same. But instead we decided, oh, it might be fun to delve. It might be fun to explore the universe. So we wound up writing bios to all the characters, episode guide summaries. We tried to, since we had all the backgrounds, we tried to showcase those. We went into the different settings for sort of around the world, as well as more localized to Detroit. And we covered the first two seasons, and then it was incredibly popular. So we wound up doing a second volume, which covered season 3, and which, even though it was sort of a little less than half as many episodes, 13 as opposed to 29, we... You know, because the scope of season 3 had expanded so much, you know, they'd gone to Cybertron for the first time and there were a whole lot of extras, we were able to make a book that was actually slightly bigger. So the AllSpark Almanac 2 is 224 pages, 1 is 220 pages. And I think one of the things that people really appreciated was that we did the whole thing, with very few exceptions, from an in-universe perspective. So it wasn't a third-person omniscient narrator talking about the characters, and it wasn't me, Jim, talking about the characters. It was the characters talking about each other. And that we had established that format for the character bios, and then when we tried to do the episode guides, we realized that we had to change that up a little bit. So those tended to be even more fanciful. You know, the simplest we would do would be just maybe a report from an Autobot or a log from a Decepticon. But in many cases, we found that we could push that envelope, and we could have the story of garbage in, garbage out told as a cereal box and things like that we were rather proud of.
I'd actually forgotten that you had approached this from a more like the ARC sort of perspective. So basically, they did all the work except for the being clever part.
Who they being Cartoon Network?
Yeah.
Well, they did all the work of giving us the material. There's very few original drawings or illustrations. There are a few. The aforementioned cereal box is one. But for the most part, we were using the character models, the backgrounds that they had.
Right. No. But what I'm saying is just the thing that people remember most fondly about it isn't just the material. It's the presentation.
Right.
And like you said, you kind of went all out, paid the same. But you really, I think you really knocked it out of the park with the AllSpark Almanac.
Thanks. Well, and I think the fan response has borne that out. It's still after, you know, at this point, this is our 11th book, if you count the collected volumes as separate volumes, which I do because I tend to put more material in and rearrange them, change the organization a little bit to make it more sensible. You know, the context has changed, so I try to make the book reflect that. So this is the 11th book we've done, and by far we've had more reviews and feedback and just generally enthusiasm about the AllSpark Almanacs than any of the other books. Legacy might eclipse that. It's hard to say because Legacy's only been out for about 3 months, and the other books have been out for about 4 years. But it's hard to say. And Legacy is such an iconic. It's something that people have been asking for decades, whereas Animated hasn't even been around for a decade.
Yeah, I love AllSpark Almanac. I think like most people do. I know Chris McFeely dedicated like half his brain to it for a couple of years. So what's in the complete edition that's not in the original two volumes?
Well, the big thing is that we made about 22 extra pages for the fan club. Back in 2011. So BotCon 2011, they created a new, totally in-continuity comic book set in the animated universe. They called it Season 3.5, The Stunticon Job, written by Marty Eisenberg, new character designs by Derek Wyatt, new toys to go along with it. Marcelo Materi did the artwork, and nobody does the animated art style, certainly in comic book form, the way Marcelo does. He really brings the images to life and makes it work. So they had done that in BotCon 2011. And then when the Diamond version of that comic came out, we had the AllSpark Almanac Addendum, which covered that material. So those new character designs, as well as summarizing the Stunticon Job story, which is slightly odd because we printed the summary of the story in the comic book with the story itself. We also had the Moving Violations, which was the prologue to that by Trent and Greg, Trent Troop, and Greg Sepulak. So, we summarized that as well and covered the out-of-universe stuff, so we covered the toys. That was the other thing about the AllSpark Almanac 2, was that was where we went out-of-universe and covered the production of the show, as well as what Season 4 would have been like and some of the Season 4 toys that never got made. So we did that for the Almanac material, for the fan club material. And then we had six more pages over the course of three more issues of the fan club magazine where we did the same sort of thing. We had a couple of new bios. We had new pages that would sort of cover, you know, what we called culture in the book. So sort of the miscellaneous section. We covered the Mirror Universe. We covered the weapons of Team Char. And we did a nice musical poster for Rosanna, who's a singer from Kiss Players, who made her way over to Transformers Animated. So all of that was 22 more pages. All of that's in the book. So which has been published before, but I think, you know, quite a few people that are fans of the Almanacs, the Volume 1 and 2, won't have seen that. So that's new. And then on top of that, we managed to get about 10 new pages in. So with new Derek J. Wyatt artwork, mostly new pages. Some of them are slightly revised, or I shouldn't say slightly, are heavily revised versions of pages we'd already done, but with new artwork that's more in keeping with the artwork from the show. And I think those are pretty neat too. So the whole thing winds up clocking in at 472 pages. And again, if you're going to do the math, it was 220 on the first one, 224 on the second. That's 444. And then 22 for the fan club. That would be 466. And we're at 472. And there's some efficiencies that you can pick up because you don't need two table of contents. You don't need two acknowledgement pages. You don't need two title pages. So that's where the extra few pages come in.
So what you're saying is I kind of have to buy this now.
I think if you like the first two, you kind of have to buy it. But I wouldn't feel too badly about it because the first two volumes seem to go for $50 to $100 on the secondary market. So if you really feel bad about it, I think it's about $28 on Amazon or $40 if you go to your local comic book shop. You know, get a couple copies, wait a year for it to be out of print, and then sell it for $50, $60, $70, and you'll come out ahead.
That's a great idea.
So,
yeah, I was actually checking Amazon this morning, and it looked like both parts 1 and 2 were sold out. So that's that's one of the things I was thinking of is, you know, were you doing this as another way to get this into people's hands because it's still so popular?
Absolutely. It's, you know, one thing you never really want as an author is for your book to be out of print. It's great when a print run sells out, but then what you want is for your publisher to go ahead and do a second printing. Now, I believe the first volume of the Almanacs had 4 printings to date, and I think the second one's had 3. So they've been trying to meet demand, but they've been, you know, it's hard to keep them in shelves. So I think one of the reasons the IDW came to us wanting to do a complete volume was just so that, you know, in the future they can kind of try and keep it a little bit simpler for them rather than try to track 2 different products. They only really have to keep one. So I don't think volume 1 or 2 are ever going to be in print again. But there's really nothing in them that's not going to be in the complete volume, so I don't see that as so much of an issue. And then we got to fix some mistakes that were in the earlier ones, you know, little minor things like typos. And one of the things that if you're a geek about publishing and writing, you know, not sort of the story, but just the actual process of it, was because we were pulling from 3 different sources, we found there were little minor but annoying formatting differences, you know, how we handled ellipses and how we handled hyphens and m-dashes that we had to go through, you know, sort of page by page and make consistent. Otherwise, it would be annoying, you know, where exactly the numbers were on the, you know, on the bottom of the page. You know, they might be off just slightly, but, you know, if you're going, because we integrated all the material. So it's not like we just ran the books back to front. You know, we kept the same basic organizational structure. So chapter 1 is Autobots. So, of course, it's all the Autobots from volume 1, all the Autobots from volume 2, all the Autobots that we did in the fan club, some new Autobots that are sort of teasing season 4 or, you know, if there's more season 3.5. And, you know, those are all together and rearranged a bit. We tried to keep all of the Elite Guard guys together, which meant that, you know, after Ultra Magnus and Sentinel and Jazz and Blur, then you have the Jet Twins, and then you have guys like Diatlas, and then you have the new Elite Guard guys that we might get from Fun Publication at some point. So, you know, we tried to make it as coherent and logical as possible.
That's great. So FYI, I just pre-ordered my copy.
Awesome.
So what's your favorite part about the new edition?
Definitely the new material. It's nice. It's nice, as you say, it's nice to get it back in print so that anybody who wants to get a copy can get a copy, at least until this volume sells out, which it hopefully almost inevitably will. But what I have a copy on my phone, proofing PDF, that every once in a while I say, oh, let me go look at my book because I'm an egomaniac. And the pages I find I get drawn to are the new pages. So, ooh, this is exciting. This will be fun. I can't wait till you guys see this.
I'm excited about it. So where does this rank compared to the other, personally for yourself, where does the AllSpark Almanac rank with the other works that you've done?
It's It's hard to compare. You know, it's like saying which of your children do you love the most? Definitely, I'm very fond of the AllSpark Almanac. I think Legacy is another one that I'm incredibly proud of, and that we've been trying to get done for years, even before we started soliciting it, even before I pitched it to IDW. It was something that's been near and dear to my heart for a long time, so it's hard to compare that. And then there are the ARC books and the Joe books and the Art of Prime. I mean, I'm really pleased with all of them, so it's hard for me to say I like one more than the other. I mean, the ARC books were the first ones I've done, and there's something about black and white character models that I find sort of starkly beautiful. And I realize it's not... I think from an objective sense, the ARC books are not as good as the Almanacs or Legacy. The material probably isn't as interesting, and the layout and presentation probably isn't as interesting. I got a chance to do the same sort of book for G.I. Joe. I did a couple of field manuals, which were basically exactly the same as the ARC, except it was a little bit more design heavy. We had sort of a grid background, and we included some file card information, and just those little touches. You know, if I was to do the ARC today, I'd probably, you know, not exactly like that, but I'd probably be closer to that than what I did. So, you know, so in a sense, I like the Joe field manuals better than the ARC books. But in another sense, you know, I'll always be pleased with the first work. You know, this is the first published work I had. So that's not a very good answer, but...
No, I get it. I'm a big fan of the ARC and the field manual. I have them both. I ended up getting... I was to the party late with the ARC, so I got the complete edition.
Well, again, that's the better version to get.
So, but I mean, so there are like models left that you could cover, not necessarily just 2D, but like other series post G1 and things like that. There's always the opportunity to revisit that later if you wanted to, just saying.
Well, one of the books I'd love to do is the ARC Bestiary, which would cover mostly Beast Wars 2nd and Neo. The trouble with Beast Wars is they don't have character designs in the same way. There are models that they use, but they're sort of 3D image files, and you'd have to, you know, get a sort of a printout of those or a render of those. But Beast Wars 2nd and Neo, and actually Car Robots, which in the States is Robots in Disguise, the cell-based Takara late 90s, early 2000 series, I think would make a really nice, really pretty slick volume. And I think actually Car Robots fits in with that very nicely. There's almost a nice little evolution where the good guys, the Max, I guess the Cybertrons in Japan, start out as the beasts with the bad guys being the vehicles. And then in Beast Wars Neo, they're all the beasts. And then by Car Robots, you've reversed it. And the Autobots are the good guys, and the bad guys are the Predacons. So it sort of makes a nice transition. And it's all cell-based animation. I have all the models. So that's something I'd love to do. But, you know, the Beast Wars stuff so far hasn't sold as well. So, and actually the Japanese stuff hasn't sold as well either. The ARC 2 is probably, in terms of the 11 books I've done, that's definitely towards the bottom quartile of sales. So it's hard for IDW to necessarily think that this is the best use of their limited resources, but I'd love to do it.
From our own internal perspective, I've seen that, things like Armada, Energon, and Cybertron are becoming increasingly popular as people who grew up on that, which scares me, but it's true. not from a show perspective, but from an age perspective, because I'm so old. But people who grew up on that now have disposable incomes, and people are really hungry for that material. So, you know, while it's 3D models, again, sort of like, you know, Beast Wars, you know, with Energon and Cybertron, I'm trying to remember, Armada was 3D too, right?
Armada was a mix.
They were all sort of, well, there was, like, gosh, now, Energon and Cybertron, they were cell-shaded 3D models, and Armada was a mix. So, I mean, but there's opportunity there as well, just saying.
Oh, yeah, no, I'd love to do that sort of material. And Legacy has been a really big hit. IDW is very pleased with our attempt to do a high format art book. So it's also possible that we might, you know, rather than do the 8.5 by 11 black and white sort of art book, that we might be able to do another oversized hardcover glossy paged art book. So, and there's a lot of potential there. I mean, for Beast Wars, for G1, for the Unicron trilogy, and for the more modern material. Actually, the only one that in some ways I feel like we'd have a hard time doing is animated. And that's only because the complete AllSpark Almanac and the two volumes of the AllSpark Almanac did such a good job of getting virtually every official piece of artwork into print already. Like if we wanted to do Legacy 2 and cover box art for post G2 timeframe, you know, we've literally printed every piece of box art from Animated. You know, every single one, with the exception of the fan club, you know, the box for the Stunticon job and I guess Jackpot, who is a fan club exclusive figure. But other than that, they're all in there. So, you know, I'm not sure we'd want to be redundant and print them twice. Or maybe we would, maybe a representative sample, but that's actually that would actually be a challenge for future art books, finding a way to include Animated that doesn't feel as redundant to me. Though I suppose it's okay in that context. It doesn't have to be completely unique.
Do you have any other thing on the horizon that you can or can't tell us about right now?
Nothing I can tell you about specifically, but Bill and I are engines of creativity, and I think that there are quite a few books that we're either working on or pitching or trying to find the best venue for. So I suspect that before the year's out, you'll either have a new book for us or at least have a new opportunity to interview us about a solicitation.
Very cool. Hey, Diecast, do you have any other questions for Jim?
No, I think you covered everything pretty well.
Awesome.
So, Jim, anything that you want to tell the fans before we bid you adieu?
I just want to say thanks so much for supporting and being interested in the AllSpark Almanac. If you like Volume 1 and 2, I really think you'll dig this one for the about the $28 it is on Amazon. I don't think you'll go wrong with it.
Awesome. Thank you very much. I'll talk to you later.
Cheers.
So we're back. Absolutely, just like I did there in the interview, go ahead and buy a copy of Transformers Animated AllSpark Almanac Complete Edition. And I set up a URL where you can just go ahead and order it, tfradio.net/almanac. You'll buy it. It'll help us out because a little bit of that will be kicked back towards us from Amazon. tfradio.net/almanac. It's awesome. Let's see here.
Well, I've got the first two separate editions, and I have to say they are a lot of fun to read.
Oh, they're awesome.
There's so much background nods and Easter eggs, and this combined edition has even more stuff in it. So it's if you love Animated, you'll love this book.
You know, all honesty, these books they put out and some of the other ones, is it just me or is like you can just kick back with one of those, despite having the internet for quite some time, and just thumb through it over and over, like, wow, look at that.
Well, it's like the art book for G1, the legacy art book. We've seen these boxes, we've seen these pictures all of our lives, but to sit down and just look at them and remember when we had this great painted and designed artwork on these boxes.
I'm friends with Rick Alvarez. And I have his books, and I've still yet to. I keep telling him one day I'm gonna have you autograph these things. He's like, no. I'm like, because I still read them. These books are great. Like this Jim Sorensen ones. They're not only great to read, but they have all sorts of stuff. Like you're saying, the Easter eggs and all that. It's like, yeah. Go ahead and look at your web pages and all that. How about you sit on your porch or whatever you have that you relax on and go through one of these things. Next thing you're like, well, the sun just went down.
Yeah.
I've taken them to like McDonald's and just sat all day and like read and eaten. It's like, screw you, I'm happy. I'm reading this book. You know, it's good flipping material.
Yeah, it's a great book.
No, and like, Don said with the box art book, the majority of the stuff in there, we've all had the internet for years. We can see the stuff anywhere, but there's a bunch of stuff in there we've never seen before that book. And that blew me away reading that.
And it's stuff that I've never really seen since the one time we saw it at BotCon 95 for a lot of the stuff that was canceled.
Yeah.
And actually, I'm glad you guys mentioned that. I actually just reposted the Legacy interview, which we did for our 15th anniversary. I just reposted that at our Facebook page at facebook.com/TFRadio. If this is a couple weeks after that, just scan down a couple of weeks and you'll see it. And it's also, I posted it to YouTube as well, because while a lot of people did see that, a lot of people did not see that interview, and it's still timely, and it's still a good interview. So, and if you want to buy a copy of that, tfradio.net/legacy. Okay, let's go ahead and Combiner Wars. I think at this point, all of us but Rob Springer have these, or most of these.
But if you don't have them, you can buy them on Amazon also.
You could! That's a great idea. I love that. I love you, Diecast.
I will have some before long. I just, this weekend I went to go buy one. Pardon me. Went to go buy one. I was like, oh, in January, as Lyndon P. Johnson said, is a month full of Mondays, meaning everything is taking it slow. So my stores that are usually where even the shampoo bottles are flying off the shelves haven't restocked.
Now, when you say shampoo bottles, you mean...
Both. I mean, literally, when you, I have no context when you said things aren't selling well. It's like, it sells well here. But, like, yeah, I've but Rid, the new Rid's starting to find its way to regular retailer and Toys R Us, so hopefully I find some. So, if not, I'm drinking myself to death.
So, Combiner Wars is flipping awesome.
I see.
Superion does not have floppy legs and stands upon his own power.
I was expecting this to be crap.
I thought it would be a Superion.
Which is what Brian just said.
Right.
Oh, yeah. That's, I mean, guess,
but,
yeah.
But, I mean, he stands up. He, his profile is great. It's a solid combiner. Aerobots don't fall out.
It looks good.
Yeah. You don't pick him up and Aerobots fall out.
Yeah.
It's,
the combiner's hold poses.
Superion's arms reach past his chest, going downward.
Actual elbows.
It's amazing. They,
double elbows.
And knees.
Yeah.
We are,
although, Don, your legs are on backwards, so.
No, my legs are.
He does it on purpose.
It's,
Don
we
sacrificed
are,
his knees for G1 accuracy. I'm sorry, Rob, go ahead.
No, I was saying, this is one of those things where we're literally at the place where the fandom is like 90% all in agreement over something.
Yeah.
Like, there's a percentage that doesn't like it, and they're whatever, but it's like, almost everyone's like,
oh. Hey, Brian, I just noticed that your ears need to be fixed on your Superion, and we have a video
great
on our YouTube
point.
Channel.
We do have a video on our YouTube channel that the fantastic Diecast put together, and yeah, you're exactly right.
tfradio.net/Amazon/ears.
tfradio.net/YouTube. That'll actually take you to our YouTube page.
And if you happen to be looking for something a little more firm than the yarn antennas that the toy comes with, some third-party options are beginning to open up through Shapeways.
Yeah.
We have went back in time. Now third-party stuff is like, we can make accessories for that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. True. So, so actually getting into the Combiner Wars stuff. Right now I have Superion combined, but I was surprised by how nice Silverbolt was. I really like the toy. He has a surprisingly easy but nice transformation, mm-hmm. and has a great vehicle mode and a great robot mode. Really good job with that toy.
It's just so nice how everything, all of his former kibble bits are built in, but they're not obtrusive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like the chest plate being the size of the legs. I mean, it's just, yay.
I was a little disappointed at the deluxe price point of how simple Dragstrip's transformation was. But
see, now Dragstrip was actually my favorite of the bunch because I felt like it was simple, but it also worked the best. I thought the legs on the aerial bots were kind of fiddly, and Dragstrip was a pleasant change to me from that.
It was definitely simplistic and easy to transform. When I say simplistic, I don't just mean that the process is easy to do. It's just also it's hassle free.
Yes,
he's a nice toy in that respect. The hardest part that I had with Dragstrip was in arm mode, figuring out what to do with his arms, trying to lock them in place. That was kind of awkward.
And I don't think there really is a good solution for that. And that's kind of a recurring issue I'm seeing with all the limbs so far, is that there's not really a good dedicated way to orient them for the combiner mode. Like, the aerial bots tend to have pegs to plug them in so they don't just bounce around on their own, but they're still just kind of hanging out there.
Yeah. And of course, Alpha Bravo's arms stay down by his sides and kind of obstruct the elbow a little bit.
Yeah, that's true too.
Well, actually, now on Alpha Bravo, what I did was I don't show that. I'm not sure this will help a lot, but I just took mine and did it at a 90 degree bend at the elbow and have it back against the body. So you've still got your full elbow, but the arm sort of blocks off the chest.
That could work.
Yeah.
Did he just break?
No, I think his gun fell. His humongous gun fell off.
Yeah, that's the only problem I've had with both Silverbolt and Superion. The gun on the peg on that back end of the gun, the shield part,
yeah,
it does not really fit as firmly as I'd like it. It's like the sides of the peg are shaved down a little bit, it looks like, compared to the rest of the gun.
Yeah,
yeah, probably. So, I guess the floor polish treatment might work to thicken it up a little bit.
It might.
So, just it is a little bit loose in the hand. Looser than I'd like, both for Silverbolt and Superion. So,
In general, the like Firefly and Alpha Bravo are pretty nice. Skydive made me nervous.
Skydive has too much paint.
Yeah.
Well, it took me forever to get the shoulders to unhinge and fold down.
Yes, yeah. I worried tremendously about that.
These shoulders are too high up, but nothing. That's how.
It is very non-intuitive, but once you do it the first time, it moves easier afterwards, so it's not scary anymore.
And I popped his wings off like 3 or 4 times trying to
do that. I did that a couple times also, because, I mean, it's the weakest joint in the system, so it's going to be where the first failure is, but, you know, like any good Transformers toy, parts are made to pop off if excessive force is applied.
The last time I was scared to move a part like that was City Commander's leg connectors.
Yeah. The last time I was scared to move a part like that was, let me see, Brainstorm.
Hmm. Yes.
Now, and I think that's a good point to move on to with these, which is, like, the Aerial Bot limbs have, like, fiddly parts in the legs, like Rob pointed out, and, like, Alpha Bravo's backpack moved in a way that doesn't feel comfortable immediately, but I have not had any incidents of, like, stress marks or anything really not going right just by their design. Like, everything moves solidly, and the toys do not feel like they're at a risk of self-destructing from using them the way they were intended. Which is a major change in my experience from the last year or so.
Yeah.
In their combined mode, though, Superion is sublime. He's excellent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is far and away what I wasn't expecting that. I was really worried. And it goes back to the Facebook group conversation that Rob Springer and I have all the time about how people interact there. But I think somebody said, I think there was a conversation I was a part of where someone said, oh, would you rather get this for, like, cheap one for $100, or would you rather have, like, a fans project one for $500? I'd rather have the one for $100. Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't
Which
you?
Which is really good.
Who wouldn't? I mean.
Yes.
You know what?
The thing is, too, you know, the third-party alternative, TFC Uranos, nobody likes it.
Yeah.
It's not.
Like, that's a slight exaggeration, but by and large, people got half that team and then sold them before there was the Hasbro one.
Superion is freaking excellent.
Now, here's one of the things I love the most about Superion, and it's so minor, but it's the kind of attention we wouldn't have gotten in years past. On his chest, that little flap that folds up and covers that hole for the leg panels. We wouldn't have gotten that a long time ago.
That and also very conveniently ensures that he does not have a silver upside-down Autobot symbol on his crotch.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I mean,
I'm evil down there, boys.
And I mean, that, to me, that shows that they took all the stuff people were saying about Fall of Cybertron and Bruticus and Combiners in general, and they listened to realize you got to have these little deft touches to make this hole as cohesive as it is. Because if this was just a big gaping hole, it wouldn't matter to a lot of people, but it'd be like, well, I kind of wish.
Oh, the big. Oh, and Silver Bolt's the chest compartment.
Yeah. Down here.
Oh, yeah. That freaked me out for a second. Then I realized, oh, you just do. Oh, perfect. Yeah.
Yeah. And like to Don's point too, like at first forming Superion, I didn't even think about that panel and didn't really notice the gap there. But the second time I transformed it, like, oh yeah, that's there. I forgot to even do that. And then I flipped up and like, okay, that's just, it's perfect. And like, I'm blown away by these combiner toys, just in general.
I'm not so blown away by Optimus Prime, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't opened mine yet, but
I think that's going to make a way better Motor Master, though.
I hope so. I'm hoping that it's a pretty major retool, because I don't think it serves as a good centerpiece at all.
Well, It's a major retool, but not a re-engineering. Go ahead, Rob.
It's a passable torso, but if you had, you know, if you had told me, when you told me they were going to be doing combiners again, that's about the step up from Bruticus I expected. Better, not wonderful. Superion is wonderful.
Well, I'm glad I haven't opened mine yet. I've got them still in the box. But
it actually makes a better just non-combining Optimus Prime, honestly.
Absolutely.
It's really good at that.
He's a great puppet Prime.
So basically, it has the ill fate of coming with a much better toy in the same case.
That's the one.
Yeah.
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 Probably if it went by itself in an assortment, you know, everybody would be pretty positive on it. It's just it got shown up the moment it was out the door.
Yeah. It's what you're saying by is an average toy that came packed with a great toy.
Yep. But
the one thing about Prime is that I'm hoping that he'll pay off as a combiner torso if and when we get Autobot cars to make Masquerade Minasaur.
That's Masquerade exactly, but we're getting Autobots.
We're getting Autobots, yeah. So yeah, just imagine what they look like underneath the hologram or whatever it was, and that's what they are.
Yeah, and you'll even be able to stick Windcharger in the chest.
So actually, speaking of Windcharger, you review Windcharger and Thundercracker. Mm-hmm. In the so I won't go too in depth with there, but you know, Thundercracker is exactly what you think it's going to be, as is Windcharger pretty much.
And Thundercracker is like nicer than the Starscream it's recolored from too, in terms of how it's made.
Wait, didn't we get an Acid Storm out of this too?
Yes.
Yeah, I just never bought it.
And who is he packed with?
Gears.
It's the same.
Oh, then I have it. Then I just don't know where it is.
Yeah, it's. For some reason, made from
Acid Storm. Because I've got gears, I just don't know where Acid Storm is.
Acid Storm was made really badly, like super soft plastic and stuff. This one, for all accounts, is apparently made from better quality plastic.
You know what was made really well?
What's that?
Power Glide.
I want to know for myself.
And Bombshell.
Really want to know for myself.
I want to know what love. I want to know what love is. Actually, I already know because Bombshell and Power Glide told me. They told me they're that good.
I'm going to put the MP3 of Dove's Cry on my phone, so that way I can kind of glance down the aisle. If I see black packaging, I can hit play as I walk up to it, and hopefully it just won't be WWE figures in the wrong location.
I would adore Bombshell more than anything ever if it wasn't for Power Glide.
Well, now, here's the good thing. With the Combiner Wars doing as well as they are and as well received, maybe that will give Hasbro enough incentive to give us the kickback sooner rather than later.
Yeah, sure.
I will be...
Or spend $80 and get 3 issues.
I will be surprised if we don't find out there's a kickback coming by the end of the year.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's like we mentioned last time. Those of us that was at BotCon, they said that they know there are certain characters like Insecticons and the Seekers that come in, that they're groups. They're known as a group more than they are as the individuals. Mm-hmm. And like they said, here's your Bombshell. We can't promise you that there's a kickback coming in the next year, but we know you want one. But we know you want one, and we'll try to work it in when we can.
It's possible we'll see one in exactly 1 month when we do our live Toy Fair coverage.
Exactly.
Yeah, they probably said that at Toy Fair, and they did say it at BotCon. I mean, it's just like the Hasbro team is tending to say the same things at their press events, and you know, BotCon's a press event as much as anything else, and you know, they're keeping consistent with that. They're getting their message out there that this is how they want to operate. A point I want to just bring up in general before we move off of this: we got Superion, we got Silverbolt, and the Aerial Bots in the first wave, and they're good toys. That never happens with anything. The first wave is never this good.
Right.
What is ahead of us in Combiner Wars?
I mean, everyone's being critical of Menasor, so maybe they're like, maybe there'll be a lot of disappointment.
Or we just haven't seen good pictures of Menasor.
So what we'll do is next week, so we get some time out of it, instead of just giving us a week before Toy Fair, we'll actually do our Toy Fair predictions next week. We'll just do that. We'll come back and do it then. That'll give us 3 weeks of timeliness to get that out.
But like you were saying, Chris, but here's the thing. If Superion is this good and Menasor is a strong figure on its own, if and when they announce Defensor.
We'll talk about it next week.
No, I'm not saying like in terms of specific characters, just like in the quality of the line itself. Yeah. Like, you know, how every toy line gets better as it moves through the waves.
Right.
If Combiner Wars gets better in terms of design and build as it moves forward, if it's already this good, what kind of toy line are we going to be at the end of the year?
It's the greatest time to be a Transformers fan ever. This time we mean it. Yeah.
And the thing is, like, you just like looking on paper at how simple the toys are designed, you would not think they would be this good, but that is what works in their favor. I know, Power Glide.
Here's my thing. With Devastator, if he is Voyager-class sized figures, he could almost stand, if they do this right, he could almost stand on your Masterpiece shelf.
Or side-by-side with Hercules.
He could like kick the crap out of my Masterpiece shelf, as far as I'm concerned. Hey, let's go ahead. We've got a lot left to cover. Let's go ahead and take a break. We'll jump to the ATT Buzz, which is going to be only for the podcast listeners. So if you're watching the video, go download the podcast, tfradio.net, and you'll be able to hear that. We'll also have the Return of Transformers Rewind with Five Faces of Darkness, which is one of my favorite episodes, period. And XV's review. Of Windcharger and Thundercracker. So,
is it Goldimus Prime?
Not this week.
Oh, it should have been. That would have been great. But we'll be back in just a couple minutes.
Radio Free Cybertron will return after these messages.
Hey, everybody. This is your old friend, John DeLuna, with an ATT Buzz. Now, I've got to say, before we get started, this recording is going to sound a lot more like an NPR show than the ATT Buzz you may remember from years past. Now, why is that? That is because in the 10 years, or at least it feels like 10 years, since I recorded a legitimate ATT Buzz, I have reproduced, that's right, at the time of this recording, somewhere in this house, within earshot, I think, is a one-year-old girl soundly sleeping. And you better believe I am not waking her up. Anyway, on with the show. The first topic this week was wrapping up the December Cartoon Viewing Club, an ATT alt.toys.transformers tradition started by Zobivore. Deciding which December episode to watch is always a delightfully difficult task. The discussion started off with Fire in the Sky. Why, you ask? Well, because December is a month full of snow, and clearly Fire in the Sky is a perfectly snowy episode. Then the conversation took the logical turn to Human Error, Parts 1 and 2, Transformers Animated, both of which take place at Christmas time. Then the conversation took the also logical turn towards talking about Ferguson and the over-militarization of police forces. Then the conversation took the logical turn to Star Trek The Next Generation. Then we started talking about Robotech. Anyway, I'm sure at some point we got around to watching cartoons. Okay, second topic. Zobivore again talking about toys this time, specifically new reissues in the Platinum Edition series, specifically the Coneheads that are coming out. And according to Zobivore, the reissue or upcoming reissue of Thrust, Ramjet, and Dirge is possibly the greatest reissue of all time. the greatest reissue to date, yes, friends, is Dirge. Last topic this week on the ATT Buzz. You know, I shouldn't say this week on the ATT Buzz because that implies there will be one next week, and there ain't gonna be. This week, the last topic also earns my award for best title in a long time to a thread. This thread is named, quote, Megatrons, plural, comma, ranked. It's come to this. Listing every Megatron and Galvatron, which I think is cheating, to date, and then ranking them. This thread's more about, like, rating them on a scale of 1 to 10, but I won't sit here and describe every one of these rankings by everybody in this thread, but I will run down the quick list of all the Megatrons that these guys are discussing simultaneously in a thread. Walmart Robot Heroes Megatron, Reveal the Shield Legends Megatron, Hinkay Megatron, TF Prime First Edition Entertainment Pack Megatron, Reissue G1 Galvatron, Energon Galvatron, Generations War for Cybertron Megatron, Transformers Animated Leader Megatron, Robots in Disguise Galvatron and Megatron, Dark of the Moon Blast Wave Weapons Base Megatron, Universe 2.0 Legends Megatron, Classics Megatron, G1 Galvatron, Armada Megatron, Armada Galvatron, G2 Hero Megatron, Small Tank, Machine Wars Megatron, G2 ATB Megatron with Starscream. What? That didn't even happen. Age of Extinction Galvatron, Beast Wars Transmetals 2 Megatron, Beast Wars 10th Anniversary Deluxe Megatron, Cybertron Galvatron, Dark of the Moon Voyager Megatron, Cybertron Jungle Planet Megatron, Cybertron Megatron, Transformers Prime Voyager Megatron, Transformers Prime Sharkticon Megatron, Beast Wars Toys R Us Ultra 10th Anniversary Megatron, Beast Wars Ultra Megatron Original, Generations ATB Megatron, Energon Megatron, Energon Energon Megatron, Alternity Megatron, G1 Megatron, G2 Megatron, the large tank, Beast Wars Transmetals Megatron, Robots in Disguise / Beast Machines Megabolt Megatron, Dark of the Moon Commander Megatron, Transformers Prime Commander Megatron, Revenge of the Fallen Voyagers Megatron, Revenge of the Fallen Voyager Megatron, Revenge of the Fallen Leader Megatron, Robot Masters Beast Wars Megatron, Beast Wars Alligator Megatron, Transformers Animated Battle Begins Megatron, Transformers Animated Voyager Megatron, GDO Megatron, Ultimate Battle Megatron, G2 GoBots Megatron, Generations Legends Megatron with Chop Shop, Beast Machines Dragon Megatron, 2007 Legends Megatron, 2007's Leader Megatron, 2007 Voyager Megatron, Universe 2.0 Galvatron, Titanium Megatron, and finally, Titanium War Within Megatron. So, I'm sure you remember every one of these Megatrons that I listed, and I'm sure you're capable of giving them a score of 0 to 10, just off the top of your head, and I'm sure you're already contributing to this thread if you're listening to the ATT Buzz.
Radio Free Cybertron. Transformers.
Rewind.
This week on Transformers Rewind, it's Five Faces of Darkness.
The Great Wars are over. The Autobots have won. The surviving Decepticons, without a leader and desperately low on Energon, retreated to the burned-out planet of Char.
Once Decepticons nearly held the Quadrant through terror, now we scrap like slargs over a few Energon cubes. Is this the fate of the mighty Decepticon Empire?
In desperation, they realized that their only hope for survival was Galvatron.
The memory bank must be in here. There it is. Find me the last visual appearance of Galvatron.
But the only clue to their former leader's present location pointed the way to a fiery, distant planet called Throw. Meanwhile, the triumphant Autobots sent Blur and Wheelie with the transforming cog to Autobot City on Earth. But mysterious invaders attacked and kidnapped Ultra Magnus, Cup, and Spike.
What happened to them all? They're gone.
Yeah, and I'll lay odds on who did it.
This planet is quarantined. Nobody comes, nobody goes until we find Cup, Spike, and Magnus.
And what if we don't?
Then we'll trash every Decepticon in the galaxy.
Are the kidnappers Decepticons or some other race of evil beings? The search for an answer took Rodimus Prime and Grimlock to Char, the new headquarters of the Decepticons. After Rodimus Prime and Grimlock are rescued from the Decepticons by Arcee and Springer, the Autobots realize that the Decepticons are now too weak to have kidnapped Ultra Magnus, Cup, and Spike. But if they didn't, who did? To find the answer, Rodimus Prime traveled deep within himself into the matrix of leadership and emerges with the incredible answer.
The Quintessons.
Galvatron emerges from the lava plasma of the planet Thrall to lead the Decepticons.
Come, Decepticons! We have an empire to regain!
Meanwhile, a daring raid led by Rodimus Prime and the Aerobots freed Ultra Magnus, Cup, and Spike an instant before the planet was detonated by the deadly Quintesson. To learn the secret of who the Quintessons really are, Rodimus short-circuited himself and went deep into the Autobot matrix of leadership, embarking on a journey into Cybertron's distant past. He discovered that the Quintessons were the creators of both the Autobots and the Decepticons.
Cybertron's in deadly danger. We're heading back there.
Now the Quintessons are intent on reclaiming Cybertron at any cost. To do it, they begin a deadly assault against both Earth and Cybertron itself.
Decepticons! Attack!
The Decepticons will destroy the Autobots. Then we will crush the Decepticons.
And soon, Cybertron will be ours!
I think we can all agree that Five Faces of Darkness is probably the greatest piece of art that human genius has ever produced. Everybody agree?
It's funny because I'm a fan of abstract art, and you're correct.
I love Five Faces of Darkness. Watching it again was a treat.
It's really the sequel to the 86 movie,
isn't
it?
It is.
Yeah,
it was intended to be.
Yeah, it's a complete follow-up. It's like literally, and now, the Transformers. Well, what are we going to do now, guys? Hope he's back.
Yeah. So Flint Dilley wrote both this and the movie. Mm. And it was glorious. So much better than the movie.
It has more to it, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. It sure does. Let's see here.
It has more to it, but it's all in the last 22 minutes.
That's not true.
Yeah. It's just spread out. It maybe could have been an episode shorter, and it would have been probably a tighter overall episode.
I think that it's, I don't want to say it's tight, but I think that there's a lot to it. There's so much Transformers Cybertronian lore that's packed into this, and it's both the old, in a sense, looking back into history, it's new history, it's retconned history, but it's history, and so much new stuff. It's the first time we see the Predacons, it's the first time we see Trypticon. It's the first time we see anything that's season three that's not in the movie. There's so much to it. Skylinks, for God's sakes.
Fighting Predaking.
Yes!
And I wish, though, the rebirth had gotten, like, I wish this had been like four episodes, like you said, Rob, and that extra episode could have, like, this was
and too, that extra episode could have dove more into, like, the nature of Headmaster RC.
Or just the Nebulon. The structure, the hive, and all, just a little more backstory. Looking at Five Faces of Darkness, it's a fine five-parter that could have been four. And like Rob said, without a big loss of anything.
Yeah, just not so much filler to fill up the time.
Yeah.
So,
it's so much out of the blue. Just so much. This is part of the Transformer universe. It's like the Matrix, which we had never heard of until the movie. Then all of a sudden you have all this backstory, just like, okay, back up the exposition, a little bit more, and dump it.
But I mean, if you think through the first two seasons, like, you know, there's little bits and pieces about what things were from Cybertron, but there was never any real world building for this as a society or, like, you know, a race that's been living for however many millions of years. Like, this was finally looking at, this is where this stuff came from. This is the origin they didn't know about, and this is the, like, backstory to everything, and this is why there is the Matrix of Leadership. Still didn't really explain Unicron, and neither did call them the primitives, but, you know.
What's kind of neat about it is, you know, the movie really kind of set the new direction, you know, from the first two seasons, but this really sets it because it's like the movie's basically, hey, did you kids like heavy metal? Well, here's a PG version.
Yeah.
You know, this is like, here's the next season, guys. It's now a space opera.
It really is. So what I like about this, it's exactly what you said. It sets the stage for season three. Season three is very much a space opera. And all the stuff on Earth, what we find out. So where in G1, all of the humans were either construction workers, Asian scientists, or
some overlap of the three.
Or some overlap of three. In this, all humans are either some vague Eastern European pauper, stereotypical Arabs, or futuristic spacefaring Americans.
And everyone in the year 2005 will be wearing jumpsuits with their initial
one. No, not everybody. Not if you're one of the poor Eastern European paupers.
Oh, true, true, true.
Yeah.
You guys remember when we did that a few years back?
Oh, yeah. So
I still have mine.
So the thing is, this takes place in 2005, and it's sort of hard to think that's the past. So watching it...
That's the future, dude. What are you talking about?
I know. So watching it...
2010 is the past.
When they're on the... What's the name of the planet? Goo? Was it Goo?
Planet Goo.
Yeah. So when they're on that and they're in that garbage scowl thing, they're CRTs that they're watching stuff on. But we don't... Oh, wait. 10 years ago, there were still CRTs, but it's the future. It's just kind of this awkward thing in my head.
No, but you have to remember, though... It's junky on technology. It's junk they found floating in space. True. This is CRTs from 1994 that are being blasted off in rockets as everybody switched over to square flat panels.
It was a slow transition. 2010, they were still using them. It's because, like, why do I need to buy a new one?
Yeah, it's 2005. You're exactly right.
Yeah, I mean, I had a flat screen in 2005. That's because I had an iMac.
I didn't.
You know, yeah, it came with it.
So basically what this episode does, it goes in and tries to reconcile the new things that happened in the movie with this existing universe that you're supposed to be living in. So one of the big things that happened at the end of Transformers, the movie, is Galvatron got flung off into space.
Yeah!
And basically the Decepticons, when the first episode starts... Well, the Autobots are in great shape. They're having basically the intergalactic Olympics.
They're having Olympics.
Yeah.
And Jazz ain't saying anything.
Yeah, they're, you know, things are good for the Autobots. The Decepticons
ain't saying nothing.
Bad, yeah, bad, bad shape.
They're starving.
They have been kicked to the curb and flushed down the sewer.
So they agree that they need their leader, a strong leader, like the Autobots had, which is kind of a nice little jab at Rodimus. Mm-hmm. So Cyclonus decides I gotta go get Galvatron. And my god, Galvatron is crazy as hell.
He's just been bubbling in some lava for an unspecified amount of time.
He's crazy and powerful.
And sounds like Frank Welker.
I vastly prefer Frank Welker Galvatron to Leonard Nimoy Galvatron.
The thing is, like, Leonard Nimoy Galvatron works perfectly for movie Galvatron.
Mm. Absolutely, he was this
where he
evil.
Is the yeah he is the overpowering menace. And in season three, Frank Welker Galvatron is great because he just sounds batshit.
Yeah, he's crazy.
He's just right. Not a plot of season three is take him to the funny farm.
I love
Web World is the best episode of anything.
I mean, Galvatron. It's like Megatron, pretty useless bad guy. Galvatron. Still useless, but we all love him. I mean, this guy is hilarious.
So,
and it's the start of the Cyclonus abusive relationship. Unfortunately,
man, he just beat the piss out of him for whatever reason. Didn't
yeah,
he?
And the sweeps. I would hate to have been a sweep.
You know, you got to wonder if there's a scene where they're looking like, why did we get this guy again?
Basically,
I mean, Cyclonus, you led the. Why didn't you take over? So, I'm still trying to figure out my voice sounds like this now.
So one thing I always thought was interesting was because Galvatron, this is part of my human brain trying to reconcile Transformers logic, I guess. Galvatron was, in my mind, a new character. Yes, he was based on Megatron, but he was entirely different. But Astro Train in this, it just takes for granted that Galvatron was Megatron. I was surprised that they knew that. It seemed like, I mean, Starscream in Transformers the movie made that connection, sort of. But,
and everybody was listening when he said so.
You think? But he's like, you think so? You think that was it?
Everybody was standing there.
But
Cyclonus and Scourge came by to visit. Maybe they were like,
they knew.
You guys know, right?
That you know, there was that intervening time. It's like
I might be Thundercracker or Bug. I don't know who I am. Really.
It's like that thing. Rumors spread around. Oh yeah, well he was Megatron. Yeah, that makes sense. I can see that.
thing for them to understand, even if Galvatron was a new individual, technically, I don't think it's a big thing to know that, well, Galvatron was made from Megatron after we threw Megatron out of the ship that time. Remember that, guys? That was pretty great.
Yeah. Well, we paid for that.
And they're all looking like, hey, Astro Train, why aren't you the leader? You convinced us to throw... You convinced us it was really heavy in space. We're from space, and we fell for it. And he's like, I'm not a good planner.
So
kind of freaked out after y'all threw him out.
So basically, the gist of this episode is the Quintessons are the creators of the Transformers. And they consider the Transformers kind of a nuisance and a threat. So they want to get rid of them. So ultimately, they try to pit the Decepticons against the Autobots, and they just basically want to turn on the Decepticons and get rid of them all in one fell swoop.
They have the best plan for getting rid of the Transformers, too. There's a switch.
Well, you know. Flint Dilly, everybody.
So are you friends with Flint Dilly on Facebook?
I was till I think I offended him one day. Forgetting. You know, you forget you friend celebrities or celebrities.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they're not your friends. They don't even comment or anything. Occasionally you see they're like...
I've made friends with Neil Kaplan and Gary Chalk.
Yeah, those guys are cool. But, you know, I mean, most of them is just like, this is my publicity page. They don't really do much with it. And then one day, and like I completely forgot because there's nothing coming from this account. And I read Autocracy, and I'm like,
I don't comment on things like that.
And I just tweeted out, they're just kind of making Autocracy as they go along, don't they? And then a little bit later, I'm like, hey, what are my friends with Flint and Dilly?
Yeah, but so
and I look, nope.
But Flint Dilly, I think, in all seriousness, I love Five Faces of Darkness, and I really appreciate Transformers the movie for what it is. And it, in one hand, I love it because I can quote it word for word, and I've watched it hundreds of times. Other hand, it kind of traumatized me. But Five Faces of Darkness goes a long way with the world building, goes a long way to make things better for me. And it really did a great job of setting up season 3.
Five Faces of Darkness would be better received overall if it wasn't so ACOM.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's...
Yeah, so...
Because, there's strong story elements in there, and there's stuff that is really important for Transformers going forward, even beyond just, like, the confines of Season 3. But, you know, the animation just kind of knocks everything down, and you're not really paying attention to what it's doing as opposed to, like, what it's not measuring up to.
Like, miscolored Transformers in the background, characters... characters that shouldn't be there.
Or everything taking a moment for Grimlock to eat a gun.
Oh, Grimlock. So this was the... Grimlock and the Dinobots were stupid in seasons 1 and 2. But they had this sort of menacing sort of vibe around them. They were a threat.
They were like barbarian stupid.
Yeah. So in
I'm scared.
In Transformers the movie, they were stupid in a less threatening way. By season 3, they were comic relief, and
they were just there.
They jumped straight into comic relief in this episode,
and they were never in any, they were never in robot mode.
No, Grimlock was in robot mode.
Fortunately,
he was in robot mode in the first part one.
And Slag was in robot mode in like part 3 wasn't on Goo.
When he was a Decepticon, because he was a Decepticon in that scene.
No. There was a scene where Slag in robot mode was walking with the Autobot party.
No, there's a scene where Snarl is actually with the Decepticons, waving his arms. It's not Slag. It's Snarl that I saw.
There's another one.
ACOM.
Yeah. Yeah.
ACOM at almost their worst.
Yeah. Plus, there was that episode where Daniel gets transported with Grimlock to the magical planet where the Quintesson was exiled. And Grimlock was in robot mode there for like
a few frames. Yeah, you're right, yeah. So in this episode, though, so many things introduced. It introduced the, Earth Defense Force? Or what is it?
Earth Defense Command.
And Marissa Fairborn.
Marissa Fairborn's one-man unit.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, she is awesome. I mean, she goes and she's...
Well, I mean, you saw the, outer orbital platform people. They just got blown away, you know, no problem. She's the only one that actually survived.
Well, she's the daughter of Flint and Lady J, who grows very fast into a middle-aged woman from 1985.
Yeah, it's
she just had an unfortunate voice. She spent most of her teen years smoking.
Yeah.
Them Decepticons are glowing again. Crap.
Yeah, okay. But let's see here. What else? So many characters debut in this. We mentioned Trypticon. We get a battle, an awesome battle that actually shows some scale that we lack in some later episodes between Trypticon and Metroplex. Mm-hmm. That's just super enjoyable to watch.
And also, we see the Predacons for the first time, and they act like they're setting up a big rivalry between Skylinks and the Predacons. It doesn't really go anywhere outside of...
Actually, and speaking of that, it features the so-called rivalry between Galvatron and Ultra Magnus, because they have that face-off, and Galvatron flees, because they're the same price point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. but then I'm glad they switched it to Cyclonus and Ultra Magnus. Because they're really both professional soldiers on opposites, and that makes a lot. I guess that's one of the saving graces of the Killing Jar, which is not one of my favorite episodes, but the
interplay should be.
Yeah,
yeah, that's a great episode.
It reminds you there's competent guys in leadership.
Yeah,
exactly. And, but you know, I liked it's Blaster says they're still on Io's Jupiter's moon. Good old Skylinks better get there soon. And the Quintessence says, thank you for telling us about Skylinks. We'll tell the Predacons so we can kill them. It's like, the hell?
Here comes death.
There's Razor Claw right now. Just jumped up right on your lap.
Yes. All right, we're going to get an accidental reenactment of that fight any minute now. Yeah.
But all in all, I mean, I do really like Five Faces of Darkness. I'm not even joking. It's one of my favorite episodes. It's not my favorite episode. But it does so much to right the wrongs of Transformers the movie that I give it a lot of credit.
There's some weird stuff in there, too, though. Like, the Constructicons turn an actual human city into Trypticon overnight while everybody's asleep.
Yeah, it's okay.
Transformers logic.
Yeah.
There's one thing to add. If you guys check out the Tommy Kennedy version... It's online.
Oh, yeah, you watched the Tommy Kennedy version of this.
Yeah, because I have the regular version, but I just didn't feel like digging out the DVD. Optimus is absolutely hysterical. Like, the second episode, like, Tommy's like, well, I've got to go. I'll come back tomorrow. I'll tell you some more. Okay, I'll transform your world. Yeah, and he flies away. Well, it comes back, and Tommy's like, you got to tell me more. He's like, I don't know. Like, Optimus generally does not want to tell him what's happening. And he's like, yeah. And then the beginning, you know, the first episode, Optimus's narration kind of leads you to believe it's been quite a while since the movie. Like, it might, there's no telling how long. He's like, for a while, we were okay. I mean, it was just like, it's kind of abruptly, it's not horrible or offensive, but it's almost like the guy writing is providing meta commentary on what's going on. Because, like, you don't really know how long it's been since the movie and Five Faces of Darkness. You just got the feeling, a few months maybe. How long could Galvatron be soaking in that lava, you know? But this, it's almost like, man, it looks like forever. They're at the Olympics now, and the world was just almost destroyed. Yeah.
It was established, though, that it was in 2005, just like the movie, right. So...
It's like, just like anything else Transformers, it's like, well... A giant monster almost ate our planet and tore everything up.
Hey, Olympics.
Yeah.
If you guys want to do something else?
If this were the 1990s and I was still typing up my thoughts on Usenet, I would try to squeeze in some sort of time dilation sort of commentary in here to explain how that works. But thank God I'm an adult and I'm not going to do that.
One thing that Five Faces of Darkness in Season 3, with Rodimus having all these doubts and the perpetual... But a lot of people don't give Rodimus enough credit, and I think he was doing it. But it's like Peter Davison following Tom Baker as the Doctor. You know, some shoes are really hard to fill, and no matter who you cast, you're going to have issues. I'm thinking, do you think Galvatron knocking the Matrix out of his hand during the movie, maybe he didn't have a full transformation into Rodimus Prime?
No.
I'm actually one of the people that will tell you, look, until Power Master Prime, Optimus was kind of a crappy leader, and Rodimus just really gets a bum rap because it's like, okay, hey, he's actually an effective leader.
And one thing we failed to mention though is the Decepticon Matrix, which I wish existed.
I was gonna bring that up when, about the whole, and they're using the greatest non-existent MacGuffin being the Decepticon Matrix.
I have the Decepticon Matrix of Conquest.
That doesn't exist for till like 3H, man.
No, like the thing with
Rodimus, kind of pointless.
He would have been just as good of a leader as Optimus Prime in the same situation we saw Optimus Prime be leader in, which was, you know, there's kind of a war going on, but it's mostly just dude hanging out with his buddies having fights with the Decepticons every once in a while. Now I think Optimus Prime would have had just as much problem being a bureaucratic leader as Rodimus Prime did.
And now another Omni Productions moment.
Ultra Magnus!
Yes, what is it, Blaster?
We've got a report. As far as we know, Galvatron and his men will be coming this way.
Is he coming to raid the power packs?
He mustn't get hold of them. We must stop them.
If Sydnia is okay, they can help. But we have to act fast. Call them now.
I'll get on to it.
We're finished packing.
I'll look out for you on your journey.
Thanks a lot.
Leave the power packs! We won't allow you to use them as gifts. Get them!
Okay, Grimlock, I'll lure them away. You go and get help.
Okay.
Take form!
You fool! You're not listening to what I say!
Hey, this is Brian. You know, we do the show every week because we love doing it. We love bringing it to you, our fans. We have lots of fans. But you know what we need more of? We need more fans. We need more reviews on iTunes. We have way more fans than we have reviews. So I'm speaking to you right there. We know how many people listen on iTunes. So if you haven't already given us a review, please do so. It'll take a second. You spend like an hour and a half each week listening to us. Just while you're listening, take a minute and a half to just go and leave a review on iTunes. It's easy to get to. If you're on our website or at tformers.com, we have a link right there. If not, here, I'll give you a URL. tfradio.net/iTunes. tfradio.net/iTunes. I can't get any easier than that. I guess actually I could get easier than that, but it can't get any. You get what I mean. So tfradio.net/iTunes. Leave us a review. It would really help us out. It will get our name out there with more fans, and it really just it makes our day. So please, tfradio.net/iTunes.
Hey guys, Phil Zeman from ASM here. Apologies for the sound quality. I'm currently recording this on my phone as my computer has been dead in the water since early November. That's just one of a couple of reasons why ASM hasn't been updated lately. But I'm not here to talk about me, I'm here to talk about you guys. Congratulations on 400 episodes of Radio Free Cybertron. That's a lot of talking. I mean, that's really a lot of talking. A lot. Seriously, 400 episodes is something to be very proud of. And I couldn't be happier for you guys. I've always thought that RFC and ASM have been somewhat similar. RFC started in 99. ASM started in 99. RFC, Kilby was on All Toys Transformers. I was on All Toys Transformers. RFC has 400 episodes. ASM has some number of posts. RFC has thousands of followers and likes and friends and Twitter people and Facebook, and probably even MySpace, and ASM has... Anyway, congratulations on 400 episodes and over 15 years of this. Here's to another 800 when we'll be really way too old to be talking about kids' toys. Seriously, congratulations on 400 episodes. Good job, guys. Here's to the future.
Yeah.
You can hear our show on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, or Palm phones. On demand and on the go. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com or in the app stores. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
I'm XV, and you're listening to the 400th episode of Radio Free Cybertron. I'd like to talk about reruns, specifically the recolors in the first assortment of Combiner Wars Legends figures, Windcharger and Thundercracker. Thundercracker is not the first reuse of the Legends Starscream mold, as it follows on from Acid Storm. Windcharger, though, is the first reuse of the Tailgate mold, and while it doesn't overcome some of the inherent problems with the mold, such as the large, bulky shoulder pieces making arm articulation difficult, especially around the backpack windshield pieces rising up over the back of the head, in general, it feels a little bit nicer than Tailgate does, and for the larger part, it looks a little bit better because it's not primarily white plastic. It's cast in a very, very vaguely translucent red in some parts. Most of the plastic has a swirly quality to it that really makes an illusion of depth to the color. It makes it look like a painted piece, even though it's all bare red plastic. The primary difference between this and Tailgate in terms of deco is that since it's a red plastic and not a white plastic, it doesn't matter that there's not really any other colors on here, and all the contrast is provided through grays and blacks or just very dark grays, depending on the piece. Windcharger does have a newly sculpted head to replace the Tailgate faceplated head, and it's a pretty good image of Windcharger. I don't think I like it as much as the 2010 Scout toy, which had a really nice Windcharger sculpt. Media Windcharger sculpt, I should qualify that with, as the original Windcharger was a visor and faceplate, much like Tailgate was. In transformation, Windcharger is basically the same situation as Tailgate. There's difficult folding around different parts because of the way the legs especially have to invert and fold under for the vehicle mode. One problem I've found of note over Tailgate is that you can basically choose to either have the car panels aligned well, or you can choose to have the robot legs pegged tightly under the body. Both things cannot happen at once, because if you peg in both of the legs and feet underneath the body, it will push the rear quarter panels and doors out of alignment. When you pop them back in, the feet pop down. It may be just a slight offset on my specific copy of the toy, but it's such a regular and predictable thing that happens at that point in transformation. It seems more like the plastic used may have cured to a slightly different size than was the case on Tailgate, and it's just making the fit not work quite right. But in vehicle mode, despite having arguably lesser deco than Tailgate, the vehicle looks a lot better for what it has. Where Tailgate used blue stylized flames on the hood to put some color and contrast to the vehicle mode, Windcharger just has silver details picking out the headlights and a little bit around the engine block. And that combined with the black windows really works to complete a vehicle mode deco, where Tailgate had a lot of problem where there was not a lot of contrast apart from the blue on the hood. The silver windows on it really just made everything kind of bleed together in the back half. Windcharger is actually a lot stronger for having a much less complicated paint deco. Now, of course, since this is part of the newer assortment that does not have partner figures anymore, much like Thundercracker, there is an anomalous 5mm port in the middle of the hood, which serves no function because Windcharger does not come with any accessories whatsoever. Just kind of the price you pay as things move forward, unfortunately. Moving on to Thundercracker, I don't have the Acid Storm use of this mold, but comparing it to Starscream, Thundercracker turned out really, really well just in terms of how the figure feels. The dark blue with the big broad red stripes on the wings and the silver highlights toward the front make for a really nice deco, along with the little bits of black here and there. It's a really nice Thundercracker color scheme, and that comes off really well in both modes. But where this really comes together well is just how well the parts feel fitting together. On my Legends Starscream, within the first few minutes of having it out of the package, there was many, many stress marks at key points on it, and I have not had that problem at all with Thundercracker. There are some very noticeable material changes, such as the stabilizers and tail planes, the tail fins on the jet, are made of a much softer plastic. They're actually flexible, as is the nose cone, to a greater extent than on Starscream, where the same parts feel very rigid. Those by themselves do not have a significant impact on any robot mode fittings, but it seems like an indicative choice that some of the material differences in this are working together to make something that just, it feels smoother as you move the parts around. Transformation's also a lot less, I don't want to say scary feeling than Starscream, because Starscream wasn't exactly a frightening experience to transform, but it's more relaxed than the process of transforming Starscream. And the jet mode comes together really solidly, and again, the deco just, it really comes together very well. So Thundercracker also does not come with its partner figure. There's a 5mm port on the back that can be used if you take off the arm-mounted blasters. You can plug one of them into the middle of the back, albeit kind of loosely because of the shallowness of the peg. Thundercracker really is a good way to show the difference in value between this series of Legends and the ones before, because Thundercracker has almost almost identical paintwork to Starscream, where Windcharger has variances against Tailgate where it's harder to do a direct comparison. The only actual difference with Thundercracker is that the chest piece, which is part of the black plastic sprue on this toy, it was red on Starscream and unpainted. On Thundercracker, it's completely paint coated in silver, but otherwise all of the other paint applications on this are pretty much the same. Actually, I take that back. The blasters on the arms, Starscream had those paint dipped. So basically you're trading paint dip on those two parts for a paint dip of the chest piece, which brings it back to basically equivalence. These are being sold at the same $10 price point as the Legends from the previous 2 years. And with the loss of the partner figure, there's no actual gain in deco work or anything else to really account for that. So you are losing a little bit, and you're not really getting a break in price. I noticed that Toys R Us in the United States, the previous series of Legends were being sold for about $11. These are being sold for $10. But again, even at that point, you're still paying the same as the general retail price for these as the previous ones, since Toys R Us had the others marked up $1. So you are losing out a little bit of value with these toys. On the other hand, though, they not only look really nice in their new decos, but Thundercracker is the better feeling of the two versions of this mold I have right now. I still want to get Acid Storm at some point, though it's much lower priority for me. I probably wouldn't have picked these up immediately, except that I bought a whole case worth of these to be able to get the new molds as inexpensively as possible per unit. But I'm actually really satisfied with these. I'm surprised how happy I am, especially with Windcharger. I don't think this is really an adequate replacement for the Scout toy. I still think that's the better representation of the character, and at this point is not that difficult or expensive to get. So of these two recolors, Thundercracker is the one I would absolutely recommend to get, and Windcharger, if you come across it and you like the way the color looks on the mold, it's not a bad pickup, but between the two, I would definitely prioritize Thundercracker.
We now return to Radio Free Cybertron.
So it's our 400th episode, and I just wanted to go over some things that have happened over the last milestone episodes and some of the things that we've talked about over the years. So in episode one, which was October of 1999.
Which was just you sitting in a room by yourself talking to a microphone, sadly.
Yeah, it was, and that's a pretty accurate way of putting it. And again, my friend Jason described it as 9 minutes of my life that I'll never get back. But so basically what we talked about on that was how he described it.
I was thinking of a pile of cassettes next to you of unaired episodes that you just made by yourself. Like, you're listening to Radio Free Cybertron?
I did. I did do that. I did that July of 1992 episode, and I did imply that I did that.
Yeah.
And somebody on the internet somewhere heard that, thought it was real, and then described me as the internet's biggest loser because I basically sat around recording myself talking about DuckTales, which is great. I loved finding that. That was the best thing. But
these are things that can only happen to Brian Kilby unintentionally.
Yeah, I know. But back in the day, that's really what it was. It was me sitting there recording to. I've got still got the microphone. I got it for $20 at. I don't even know how I had $20 back then. I was so dirt poor. But I got $20 and I was recording it into the sound card of my computer to myself. I wrote everything out. It was sad. But what I talked about in that episode was transmittal tube black arachnia, which is something that I had found. I was one of the first people to find that, so I got to review it. It was a coup, sort of. And back in October of 1999, I was able to talk about transmittal tube black arachnia. Has everyone heard that? Has anyone actually listened to that? Yeah. It was pretty terrible. Yeah, I know you heard it, Rob. It was pretty terrible.
I told you my whole. This is the future.
I know.
Well, like I said, I just did a report on internet radio. Like, whoa. Someone else is on the wavelength.
And we are on the same wavelength.
To run.
Way too much, I know. So, episode 100, you'll notice that you wouldn't expect the time to be where it is, but it's in August of 2009, which is a little later than October of 1999.
No, most podcasts only have 10 episodes a year on average. It's fine.
Yeah. So, I actually had the first run of RSC. We recorded about 97 episodes. And then it was sporadic for a while, and we actually didn't have the 100th episode until we came back in August of 2009. And it was I guess it was still just me and JD for the most part. I think XV and John were on it pre-recorded at that point.
I sent in some stuff too. I was like, send it in by this time. We're like, okay.
But it was primarily just a two-man show, me and JD. And
it got a lot better after we started doing it this way, though.
Yeah.
You got a groove back, yo.
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun to begin with when it was just me and JD trying to figure out how we were going to do it, or JD and I. But we were talking about the 23rd anniversary of Transformers the movie, and even though this was 2009, we were talking about Transmetal flaking. Mm-hmm. Rob Springer reviewed Revenge of the... You reviewed a toy. Interesting. I don't remember this.
I reviewed toy. I think the very first brand new show, though, because I thought it was just going to be a one-off thing. I was like, oh, RSC, what silly thing can I do?
You reviewed Revenge of the Fallen, Human Alliance, Bumblebee, and Sideswipe.
Oh, yeah. That was a few episodes later.
Let's see here. Then JD and I talked about Beast Machines because, you know, there's nothing else to talk about in the 10 years. JD did the Today in Transformers History, which became This Week in Transformers History, which became nothing at all for a while until I brought it back. And we also had a weekly trivia contest, which we did back in the day, too.
Yep.
I would almost bring that back, but no.
Everybody's too smart now.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard, but you guys will win a construct bot. Yeah.
But back before Google was Google and there was so much information on the internet, you could do that. Yeah. Not so much. So episode 200 was June 22nd, 2011. JD actually hosted that episode. And it was about Jim Shooter's you guys talked about Jim Shooter's Secret Origins of the Transformers, which I don't remember. That was
It was a really interesting read. You should go back and find that.
Yeah.
It was one of those, like, wait, I thought I already knew how this went.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And we had a review of the Dark of the Moon game, and there was a discussion on Dark of the Moon as well. As well as a review of a Transformers Prime episode, so that helps date that.
How long has it been since Dark of the Moon, guys?
4 years. Well,
4 years, yeah, because those came out right as I started my job and had to do the pre-recorded stuff again.
Yeah.
So has anybody synced up any Pink Floyd to that movie yet?
No, but I did sync up Pink Floyd to WrestleMania 6, Hulk Hogan versus the Ultimate Warrior.
How'd it work out?
It was awesome.
I bet.
Was that 5 or 6? It was one of the two. I think it was 5.
So when he was shaking the ropes, was it during like...
Yeah, it was pretty great. And episode 300 was February 27th, 2013. And that was the biggest thing on the story that week was the BotCon 2013 set being Machine Wars.
Machine Wars! I'm still excited, guys.
Yeah, and like all of 2 toys in it actually were Machine Wars based.
Yeah, I know.
I was excited at the announcement. But, this is perfect for BotCon.
But that doesn't seem like 2 years ago. And no, it does. The 2011 episode certainly doesn't seem like four years ago. It's ridiculous.
I'll be honest with you guys. I have a hard time remembering years at this point. It's just like 15.
It's like BotCon. You know, I should remember what came out at what BotCon, but everything blends after a while.
I can do that. It's just the past couple of years, I don't know. I guess it's like, it's not 2012. You sure?
I was impressed that Chris was able to, you know, remember what wave mates were in that classics wave from like 10 years ago.
Yeah, it's like I can do it too, but don't ask me if I turned off something. I'm like, uh-oh.
Okay, so this is a little afield, but back in 2002, 2003, there was the Gundam action figure line in North America, yep. And just internally in my head, I was able to catalog all of that and actually archive it for a sadly short-lived website, but just without any, like, you know, documentation or anything, I could remember every single thing to actually do the documentation myself. It's a very sad and useless power.
Yeah, because I'm thinking now, it's like, I could tell you the exact lineup and wave of the original RID line. Now that I think about it.
Yeah.
Okay, so there was...
Let's learn useful skills.
Sideburn, Prowl, and X-Brawn in the deluxe assortment.
Mm-hmm. The Spy Changers came out first.
Right.
Which is a complete team, 2 in a pack. Let's see, we had Optimus and Magnus were an evergreen. Megatron, Skybite and the Predacon Trio. Wave 2 was... Now,
Wave
I get there. Yeah,
Towline,
Wrecker Hook,
Tolo,
yeah. Jet, Skyfire, and Skids.
And okay, great.
We are winners.
Good to know. So,
high five, Rob.
So,
high five.
We are good at being awesome.
I want to cover the top awesome topics losers that we've talked about over the years. I'm basing this on the tags that we've tagged the podcast with. And not all the podcasts have been tagged thoroughly, especially the older episodes, but at least for the last 5 or 6 years, the top things we've talked about, BotCon, not surprising, mm-hmm. Age of Extinction, Transformers Prime, IDW, Dark of the Moon, Age of Extinction again, but just Transformers 4, the Robots in Disguise comic, War for Cybertron, Don, this is for you, RC. RC has been a major topic for us. I don't know why, but somehow she's come up in conversation a lot. More Than Meets the Eye, Combiner Wars. Combiner Wars is new, and it's already a top topic for us.
Yeah.
Because I pretty much tag every episode.
Because it's awesome. Wars.
I put Justin Bieber and all the tags on the blog.
Another Dark of the Moon again. Fall of Cybertron, Generations. Sadly, I say sadly, but San Diego Comic-Con has become a huge deal for us.
Well,
I find this one interesting because wait, you're going to say something, Rob?
No, you're saying. I'll go ahead and finish because I'm like the reason we're saying sadly and reason we talk about BotCon so much when there's it's not the only horse in town anymore is because we're still stuck in remembering when it was the only one in town and when all these other guys came knocking. It's like, oh, now it's cool. So I think we're still in that. Yeah, San Diego Con. Yeah, great.
Yeah,
SDCC.
Sadly, because the scheduling of BotCon the last few years has basically made SDCC usurp it for what BotCon was most notable for.
Yeah.
Or the non-attendees, I should say.
It's watching the rise and fall of something that once was like Christmas for us all. Then it became sort of like that uncle you kind of put up with. And now it's kind of like, please don't die.
So let's see here. Another one that surprised me, but I'm glad it's in here, is our topic, auto assembly. Considering Amy's the only one of us that ever goes, and Amy hasn't been on recently. Bumblebee, Dinobots, Masterpiece Rodimus Prime, what a crappy toy. Power Core Combiners, and
yeah,
I know, it made me very happy. And Toy Fair 2014.
Nice.
Yeah, that's pretty much been our top topics that we've talked about, at least over the last 5 years.
That and Kansas soda.
We used to talk about
beer wine.
Soda.
Beer wine, that's what I was going to say.
I used to start tagging this as cheer wine.
We should really contact them, because at this point, I think we actually mentioned them more than their own employees.
Yeah. Problem is, it's so regional. It's if it was a national or international brand, or
we need to work harder to spread the good word of cheer
for
wine.
For a while. If I wanted cheer wine, I have to go like maybe to Warner Robins mid Georgia area to get some, and then for a while it was everywhere and it was good. Now it's back to this one Walmart has it and the thing by the registers.
Yeah.
Yeah, damn it, Cheerwine. Yeah. I can still get Sundrop, like I wanted that.
So I think it's fitting that the 400th episode ends with Cheerwine.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, of all things.
We love you, Cheerwine.
Everybody.
Cheerwine has been our miracle maker.
That really should have been one of the top topics.
Cheerwine has gotten us news. It's made us friends.
It's bought us toys.
Friday night at TFCon, when I went back with Kristen to put her up, she was going to bed, and I went back with her. You had given me a cheer wine. I came back to find you guys, and I was walking around. And I was just walking around holding the bottle, taking sips, and so many people were like, they really do drink that stuff. I'm like, huh? And, like, I walk up in the bar. So it gets me, as I walk up in the bar, and our friends from Shattercast are sitting at our table all chatting, you know. And they're, like, they're all staring, and then, like, Greg's like, you guys really are nuts about that crap, aren't you? And I'm like, not even thinking about it. I'm like, actually at the place where someone would recognize me for this soda walking around with a bottle.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Isn't it weird going places like that and people knowing who you are? Did you ever expect that to happen?
Well, and like,
I get that sometimes here.
Yeah, and at Shardacon, after I got there, Rob was taking me up to the room so I could drop my luggage off. We passed one of the organizers in the hallway and, like, hey, XB.
So it's one of those things, like, not to Don's level, because everybody knows Don, but I have always been a pretty noteworthy, loud person in the fandom. Like, especially going back in the day when the fandom was much smaller, and it was, you know, everybody knew everybody.
It was us in this room.
Yeah, like, so going to BotCon, hey, Brian, how's it going? You know, haven't seen you in, you know, since last year.
Yeah.
That was way more common, but now since the fandom is so much bigger, it's weirder, the people that you don't know walking up to you and asking for your autograph or something. I don't like that.
I've had it occasionally happen.
Sorry.
Go ahead, Rob.
I was saying, I've had it occasionally happen without the show's influence, but it definitely is much more, like, at these cons. Like, literally at TFCon, I walk. You guys know me. I just kind of nod and say hi to everyone I walk past. And, like, I walk past this guy and he's looking at me. I was like, oh, hey, how's it going? How's it going, man? Hey! He walked off. And I heard, like, how's it going? I'm like, really?
Rob, Clay, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say, when we were at Shardacon, one of the organizers, Chris, had us all autograph his program. And there was just this moment of, how did my life get here? How did this happen?
My golden rule is, sure, but you got to autograph mine, too.
Yeah.
That's, I should have thought of that.
Me and you are on the same level, dude.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah.
Exactly. Chris, he's awesome.
He's a little bub. Chris Topher.
Topher is awesome, yeah.
He's my totem.
I love that guy. He's awesome.
Everyone knows me. I mean, a lot of people, you know, were not, you know, they always groaned whenever I stood up, but you know, it's like, I might have groaned when you stood up before
yeah, Donna.
Me yelling at that,
but I mean, I haven't asked for several years, and you know, there's that. But it's weird being at TFCon in Chicago and people knowing me by my voice and knowing Massey, like, you're the guy with the cat.
Again, the best part of TFCon, when you stood up and you said, I'm not going to ask the question everyone thinks I'm going to ask, and everybody laughed because they knew what you were talking about.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know,
and that's why I was pushing you. Like, if we ever get you doing, like, video stuff independent, like segments, you need to start with, "My name is Don. Perhaps you've heard of me."
Yeah.
You know, well, I think what makes this funny for us, Brian, you know, XV and me, it's like, guys, Don's, people are going, "You're that guy for something else at Don." Because it's forever, it's like, you know, I mean, Don knows we're talking about, "Oh, you're that guy."
Yeah.
Now it's like, "You're that guy. RC, what?"
Yeah, well, I mean, I met a few people at BotCon who knew me from the podcast, but they
most people know you from being Don
as Headmaster Don, and I said, "Oh my God, you're him!" Like, yes,
you're both guys. You're the guy on the podcast, and you're Headmaster Don.
I am two Dons in one.
I remember, like, I think it was 10. I think you didn't ask you asked Hasbro a question, and the turn was like, "Dude, you're not going to ask this year," and you're like, "I got the animated one, man. I don't care anymore."
Yeah. So again, I just want to go back. Cheerwine, you're wonderful. I love you, and thank you guys for being here on
Set Up Shop in Georgia again.
400th episode of Radio Free Cybertron. We'll catch you next week. Have a good one.
Yes.
Take care, buddy. Thanks for watching.
This has been Radio Free Cybertron. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at tfradio for news and updates. Watch our live stream at tfradio.net/live. Join our Facebook fan page at facebook.com/tfradio. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, TF Radio Network. Have a question or comment? Leave it on our Facebook fan page or mail it to contact@tfradio.net. This podcast is released under a Creative Commons license. Any part of this podcast can and should be redistributed, but please, proper attribution is required if you know what's good for you. Radio Free Cybertron, the original Transformers internet radio show since 1999. 100% girlfriend free since 1999.
This is Brian Kilby. Many of you have heard of the Transformers Hasbro insider, Patrick Stewart. Patrick has been internet famous forever. He has been sharing information to certain Transformers fans and the Transformers community through Alt Toys Transformers. Many things from the tiny little Matrix that was supposed to be released with some Transformer. I don't know. What was that, Patrick? What was that toy?
Well, Brian, it's actually not a one-time thing. There's been several times we've actually wanted to place a tiny little Matrix with Optimus Prime. In fact, right now, I'm going to tell you, we've planned every Optimus Prime to come in his trailer, a Matrix, and a roller. And then we stopped, reevaluated, and said, "Hey, if we take all that out, we can make a lot more money." So we did.
Okay, that makes sense. So I have a couple of questions that the fans have wanted to know, and we only have a couple of minutes with you because you are a very busy man, very busy man. So I want to know a couple of things. So as a Hasbro insider, why do you give Transformers listings and information to Toys R Us when invariably the information is going to leak to Sabertron or TFW or one of these sites when someone just takes a photograph?
Well, you know, it's part of the business of things, Brian. Toys R Us is a big retailer, and they carry a lot of exclusive product. So we have to give them this information. Now, I can't say names because we're talking about corporate mandate level. All right, the fact that I leaked to you guys is already kind of risky. We've shot people. There has actually been a Toys R Us store manager, a really goofy guy. He used to wear a hat with a feather on it. I personally held the shovel as we buried him a lot behind, and I can't say his name, but he used to work with Hasbro, no longer. Same body pit, though. Same body pit. I actually poured the lime on the Toys R Us manager. So what we do is we say, "Hey, we got to work with these retailers," but we actually employ a guy to work and say, "This guy, snoop them out. They'll go on your IRC channels. They'll go on your MySpaces. All these places you guys go that are hip to talk about Transformers." And when we see these things, leaks happening, I don't know. Have you ever heard of hacking, Brian?
I have heard of hacking.
We have a guy who hacks, and what he does, he hacks and he writes him an email with a picture of a girl as his avatar. You know what an avatar is?
That was a terrible movie that M. Night Shyamalan did.
Yeah, he totally stole that name for us. We actually have it trademarked just to keep Bandai from using it. So what we do is we send him an email with this girl promising him the world. And this is how you hack Brian. He'll give you his address. And then we killed him.
Wow.
I hate to tell you this, but the Christmas parties at Hasbro are 90% internet guy meat.
Wow, that's shocking. I would not have expected that. So moving along to our next question, our friend Don wants to know, are we getting Miko in power armor in the new Robots in Disguise series?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's been some price constraints here. We're absolutely getting a Miko. It's going to be a repaint of a toy from Armada. This toy, it was called Hotshot. And if you look at the face on the box art, you will see the original design for Miko actually had these really pointy eyebrows in this French design drawing we had. And we said, that kind of looks like Miko. However, Miko's now a boy. And it's going to be a blue toy. And I'll be honest with you, Brian, safety laws have changed. So we went ahead and took away that fiery missile thing.
Interesting.
It is. It's going to be Miko in her armor. Miko in his armor. We're a very progressive company. This is how we do things. But yes, Don, Miko's coming out. Prowl under the Universe line will be the name. Turns out Miko's owned by another company.
Interesting. What about Masterpiece Megatron? The rumor is that we're getting a new Masterpiece Megatron, and I need to know. The fans want to know, are we getting a Masterpiece Megatron?
I killed that guy last week, to be honest with you, Brian. But what we do with the Masterpiece Megatron is we take a poll, and we garner interest. And people keep saying they want Masterpiece Megatron. Here's the real talk, guys. No one wants Megatron. So what we do is we release another Optimus. And using the sales of each Optimus, we say, hey, when are we going to release this Masterpiece Megatron? We were going to release Takara Masterpiece Megatron. We actually had a brand new one engineered. And he was going to come out lifelike Walter P-30 gun. He was going to have the stock and the barrel. No orange safety tip, guys. Can I be honest with you, Brian? Can I give you some straight dick right now, Brian?
Yes, sir.
We made up that crap about the gun. You can totally release a gun as realistic as you want. Here's the catch. It has to be either really big or really small. So essentially, you can't hold it. He will not have a pistol grip. That will be a removable part that transforms into a gun rack. We have this sitting in the back, and we're saying one day when people actually want a Megatron, we're going to give it to them. Because that's one thing we do, is we give the fans exactly what they want. Everyone wanted that Bruticus. Brian, we have another one coming, by the way. And Combiner Wars, you've heard it here first. We have a Combiner Wars Bruticus. We took the Fall of Cybertron one and re-engineered it to have working joints and a spring-loaded missile gimmick. Brian, tell me right now, as a fan, and I've already heard this, but go ahead and tell me, what is your chief complaint with the Fall of Cybertron Bruticus action figure set?
It's not large enough, and I wanted it to be slightly less stable than it is.
Well, Brian, we have improved this mold so well. What we've actually, oil is on the rise. I don't know if you watched the news, Brian, but oil is on the rise in price. I think you pay at the pump every day. And so we've had to make it a little smaller. But while making it a little smaller, we added more features. For instance, he now has a hue of orange on the bumper. And if you really look at it, you say, this right here makes the toy.
Wow.
Also, firing missiles.
That's amazing.
And by the way, ankle tilts.
So the Combiner Wars Abominus that you were telling me about earlier,
yes,
that's going to be released after the rumored... that's actually what I need to know. There's this Titan-class Devastator that people are talking about. People are saying it could be 6 Voyager-sized toys, 5 Voyagers, and a leader class. Clear this up for us, Patrick. What is this?
I am going to tell you guys right now. There is no difference between a leader class and a modern masterpiece. So basically, the guy who designs modern masterpieces, your Prowl, your Sideswipe, your Bumblebee, your Magnus, your G2 Meg... Did I say that? Sorry. You did forget to strike that from the record. These guys are actually designing also the leader class of Voyagers. So we thought it was only natural to make this Devastator. So we'll have all 6 members, including a retail version of Prowl that will be a deluxe, that will turn into a head brand. Available by Christmas 2015.
Wow.
G2 repaint at San Diego Comic-Con. And Brian, I hear what you're saying. Why if I don't go to San Diego Comic-Con? We will make sure there are supplies left to be sold on Amazon, our own toy shop, and Fun Publications. We're going to send them 5. And you'll be able to get there too, guys.
Wow. That's...
Why is left? But I'm saving a few back in the back. Just, you know, I'm looking out for you. And afterwards, a year later, we're putting it back out for a smaller price in a different box.
That's amazing.
You will not be able to get this deal anywhere else but San Diego Comic-Con and the week later Amazon.
So Patrick, how would you describe what it's like being a Hasbro insider?
Well, Brian, if I must tell you, living the life of a rock star is not easy. Some days it's smoother and I only have to listen and get the noise. You know, my job is very difficult. Some days I only have to listen and it's like a leaf on the wind. There comes the news. Other days I have to dig a little harder. We have some zip drives around, Brian. And I'll go through those discs and we still use zip drives because no one can copy it. So in our Tiger division, we have zip drives. And let me just let you guys one thing know. We're coming back out with the Tiger handheld games.
Wow, I didn't even realize that was a Hasbro product.
We bought them. I'm not going to lie. Pawtucket, Rhode Island is just one big body pit of corporate executives.
Interesting. So I will ask one more question, and we'll
end there. Walk on the TFCC guy and the Mastermind guy. God's advice me well.
So one more question. Our friend Don is very interested in visionaries, and
fellow with the glasses and the mustache.
Yeah, he has a mustache most of the time. It's pretty great.
We have him on file.
I'm not surprised by that. But my question is, will we be getting a new Visionary series?
I'm really upset that this happened. But we had a file, a former employer of ours, Mr. Archer, he had a file with Don's name on it, Donald, and there's the picture. Wears a lot of polo shirts, doesn't he? So here is Donald. And we had an RC. We had Visionaries. It had something about Kim Possible. I don't even know what that is.
I don't either.
It must be. Those never really. Some people are really strange, Brian. So we had a file that was under the, unless we want to go bankrupt, do not make these items. Well, somehow in Mr. Archer's untimely disposed leaving, some of those files got out. And luckily, the first draft of the RC figure only made it to the division. Because there's a... Let me explain to you the concept that we had developed and then cut out because it would not sell. We called it Ultimate RC. It was a Headmaster. And it was going to tie in the Combiner Wars. It was a Headmaster RC, but also a Power Master and a Target Master. You see, Spike, actually, it would also double as Fortress Maximus's head. So if you guys, which are Fortress Maximuses that don't have a head anymore, you could just bought this toy, and the Power Master also turned into a Cerebros head for your Fortress Maximus. So that was the Power Master engine. Now here is the kicker. He wasn't a set. He was actually going to come with the repaint, which is going to be an Energon edition. But there was going to be a Target Master that, depending on what store you bought it at, was going to be a different character. Walmart got Carly. Target had Sparkplug. We were going to do like a convention set, like for San Diego, Balcon. You know, we always had that little store set up, you know, and we were going to have a special edition and have, are you ready, Brian? Buster.
Wow. Buster Witwicky.
Buster Witwicky.
Wow.
And we ran some numbers and we said, what are we thinking? And we put it away. The tooling's made. So it was actually going to succeed a line that was coming out in 04 called Transformers Prowl. That was just going to be a line of Prowls. And we put the kibosh on that, as well as a repaint of Soundwave. It was going to be the G1 Soundwave, repainted to look like its cartoon colors. It was all going to come out in one succession with the RC, Ultimate RC, coming out with Combiner Wars.
Wow.
But we decided not to go that direction, Brian. Because we said that was not going to work. Because Brian Boys don't like girl toys.
No. We know that this is true.
This is not the real world, Brian. So tell me, Brian, do you buy our products?
No, I don't.
Yeah. Brian, I have your picture at home. It's on that zip drive. You've got 5 Titan Quest figures already this week. Why did you buy Drift? Dad's got a tracking measuring on it.
I thank you, Patrick, for coming on the show. We'll talk to you later.
How many times do you go to the Sheets gas station, Brian? According to the data on your Drift Titan action figure, you stopped at 5 on the way home.
Thank you very much.
We're watching you.